Blog Talk Radio.
Guys, you are listening to Onyx Nights Paranormal Radio. We are live on the air right now. I'm your host, Onyx. Got a good show tonight. I have Debbie K. McMartin with the movie Skookum, The Hunt for Bigfoot. She's going to be joining us, giving us an update. The second half, I'm going to have Michael Hall calling in. He's with the movie Something in the Woods. He's going to be giving us an update as well. And I'm also going to have my Northeast Texas team, Onyx Nights Paranormal Cryptids. They're going to be calling in live from the field and touching base with us and letting us know how everything's going. And I'm sure we'll have a couple of surprise guest callers. Thank you guys for listening. I apologize that I wasn't able to be on air last week. I had to go down to Florida, take care of some legal business, which went in my favor, I might add. And, I mean, by the time I got home, it was about 15 minutes till showtime, and I was just beat from driving. So, anyway, today was an interesting day. I finally found out what's going on with my shoulder. I've got to have surgery. Got to have the clavicle scraped and a couple other things that they got to go in and fix. So that's going to be fun. That'll happen on the 9th of July. The doctor said, this type of injury that he sees with people who lift heavy weights. And I told him, only when I pee. Don't worry, it'll come to you later. No pun intended. Okay, enough of that. Let's go ahead and bring Debbie on and get this show rolling. Hey, Debbie.
Hey, Brian.
Thanks for joining us.
How are you doing?
Sore. I had to. They had to give me a shot in my shoulder today, and it actually made it hurt worse than prior to even going.
Ouch, that's rough. Well, I'm hoping that you're going to have a full recovery after you have your treatment and your surgery. So,
oh yeah,
sorry that you're feeling bad.
They gave me this paper to fill out, to sign and everything, and it says all the stuff that could possibly go wrong, and there's like cardiac arrest, amputation, all this stuff listed. I look at the nurse and I'm like, how often does this stuff happen? And she's like, oh,
well,
no, that's
you know,
just a
they have
case.
To cover
Yeah.
themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, they do that for when you have a hangnail. So
yeah.
rest
I'm
assured,
like,
you know. It's,
I don't. Yeah, I don't want to be the first in that lineup.
Oh, I
so
know. I think your chances are probably greater of getting hit by a meteor than having any of that stuff happen.
Oh, I hope.
So.
Yeah. Well, it's only the second surgery I've ever had in my life. So and the first one was when I was 5 and too young to really remember. So I'm mm-hmm. kind of a little nervous about it. But from what he said, it's a common procedure that they do. So here's hoping. But, you know, I'm the kind of person, if it can go wrong, it would.
Well, I know, but you gotta think positive, and we'll be sending out good vibes and prayers for you. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. So I've had since the last show, I've had some interesting encounters here, including some heavy branch breaking and tree shaking and wood knock and howls, which I recorded and posted over on my website. But you guys have been pretty busy too. You recently had members of the Northeast Texas, the cryptid team, go up there for some interviews, correct?
We did. We went to Falk, Arkansas, and interviewed Johnny Holmes, Doyle Holmes, Greg Moorhead, and I'm just going blank right now. Brian Empey, yes. And they were awesome, awesome interviews. I'm in the process of getting those uploaded to my Dropbox, and actually I'm going to put some of those on our Skookum Facebook page. So, that's pretty exciting. And these will go – oh, go ahead.
I was so jealous, too. I know you know that. I've talked to you about it before. I was like, man, I wish I could have been there.
Oh, I know.
I'm glad I could arrange all that for you guys, though. And get all you guys.
Oh, that was awesome. Thank you so much.
That's no problem.
Yeah, and I think a trip to Mississippi is in order because I'm, you know, Mike and I did a radio interview last week with Laurie, and we were talking a lot about the Mississippi activity over there and about the number of sightings and encounters and vocalizations that are heard and that kind of thing. So I think a trip over there is in order to get some interviews. I would really like to have, for this director's cut DVD for Spook'em Hunt for Bigfoot, I would like to have in the extra section at least 20 interviews with mainly from people in the area of where we filmed, you know, in and around Falk, which is very close as
right.
a crow flies. It's 30 minutes from
I tell you
where
what,
we filmed the movie.
If you come this way, I know I've sent you pictures here and there, but I want so badly to take you and show you the area where I go and research, because I believe that it's pristine for the type of movie, you know, when you get around to making a sequel or whatever. I think it would be an ideal location. It's mm-hmm. it's got a very Washington State look to it, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
A lot of
as a matter of fact,
ferns and
I drove
big trees.
I drove through Mississippi, and I actually stopped last Sunday.
Oh, I wish I'd known.
Coming from Memphis to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and I got a feel for where all the terrain and the hills.
Oh,
and,
you drove
you know,
very
as you
close
guys
to
call
my
it,
neck
God's
of the woods.
Country.
Oh, yeah, it's gorgeous. You drove
so
very
you
close.
To, are you close to Jackson?
I am 2 hours
ready,
I'm 2 hours north of Jackson. I am about an hour and a half north of Meridian. I am 30 minutes from MSU and about 45 mm-hmm. minutes from Columbus.
Oh, okay.
I'm like in the north central part of it.
Okay.
But,
all
I mean,
right.
if you drove... I'm sorry.
Oh, there's a couple of other people in Mississippi I would like to interview too who've had some really interesting encounters. So, definitely have that. Before we release the movie, I'd like to get that so we can include those on the DVD, those interviews. Because I think people are people that have been following us and really understand and appreciate what we're trying to do here will be as interested in those interviews as they are in watching this good movie.
Oh, of course. Of course. I mean, for so many people I talk to, even those, when watching the show, Finding Bigfoot, that's the reason they watch it. They watch it for all the silly shenanigans of the actual crew. They watch it for those witness testimonies and the interviews.
Exactly.
So
that's what's
and
real.
I'm not saying that that would be more important than the movie. In your case, I'm saying that that's what interests people is actually hearing that first. And you and I have talked about this before, hearing that firsthand account.
Exactly. And yes, and I think that's really important. Of course, we have a few people like Dr. Meldrum and Bob Gimlin, who we've interviewed. Well, we actually interviewed back in 2010. That both interviews are part of the lineup too. And of course, they're not from this area, but they are strategic, very important people, and have been for a very long time in the Bigfoot world and the Bigfoot field. So their interviews are just wonderful to have as part of all that. But for the most part, the primary interviews will be people in the area whose stories are eerily similar. I mean, their accounts are eerily similar, people that don't even know each other and maybe 100, 150 miles apart.
Right.
But in the same general area of the country, heavily wooded, heavy swamps, lots of water. That seems to be the criteria. And
well, I'll tell you what, if you come back this way, I definitely want to meet up with you and be involved with the interview process. But I want to bring you out there with me. I want you to experience doing the research part of it.
Okay, that sounds good.
That's an invitation there. I'd love to take you to my area and let you experience what it's like to be out there, at night and have these things going on around you.
Oh yeah. Okay. Awesome.
And
because that's part of my in addition to making a sequel to this movie, I love to be able to just continue the research because it's so fascinating and interesting. And we are, as we all know, we're getting ever closer to discovery in whatever form that might come.
Right. I agree 100%. I talked to someone today on one of these posts, and they were all about, why do you feel you have to prove? I don't go out there to prove anything to the world. I go out there to understand them for myself. The world can go out there and find out they're real the same way I did. So it's not about proving to anyone. It's for me, it's all about going out there and understanding them or trying to at least understand them and why they are the way they are and why they do the things they do.
Right, exactly.
And, as far as the sequel goes, I'm looking forward to that, and exactly why.
Oh, yeah.
I am so
you're on.
Ready.
You're already signed on.
I've been practicing my howls. I've been studying the Patterson Gimlin film on the way they walk, and I'm ready. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a blast.
All right.
So
and
you
I'm
guys,
doing some research too on how to just from the aspect of filmmaking, how to make a film for even lower cost. Then it's just a big challenge here, and the equipment and the cameras, with the advent of the GoPro camera and all the incredible things that it can do, and it's really relatively inexpensive, especially in contrast to the RED and the RE. We use the GoPro camera for the pickup shots that we did after the film was made on the drone camera. Shane Dazicek, who is part of our crew and also one of the main actors in the film, is a filmmaker in and of his of himself, and he had ordered the drones because they had just been released by the government for civilian use for films and that kind of thing. And so he brought the drone aircraft. He flew down here from New Hampshire and brought that. And we filmed, you know, aerial shots and time-lapse shots. But he used a GoPro on that drone, and it was just awesome. And I guess a lot of people heard GoPro went public today on the stock market, and everybody
oh, wow.
was going nuts. So, yeah. So, you know, it's a whole new world, and you have to keep your finger on the pulse all the time, not just of your subject matter, but about the filmmaking aspect and how we can streamline it, make it more economical. So it's just doable, and
right,
we give
right.
people what they want.
Now, do you guys have to pay? Do you have to pay for your locations where you go and shoot? I mean, or
you know what? Honestly, we didn't. We did not have to pay for
any
location.
Oh, that's great. Because I was going to say, I could get you full access
mm-hmm.
to this wildlife refuge that I live
mm-hmm.
nearby
mm-hmm.
for free.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Well, what's important is that you have a staging area that has access to facilities, and you have somewhere where you can bring in the food and keep the food safe and
right.
those kinds of elements, you know, but have the wilderness very close or right there or the swamp right there so that you can, you know, have your setup and have a place where people can be comfortable for 10 and 12-hour stretches. But have your wilderness very close.
Oh my God!
You can just walk,
you have
you know,
got
100
to,
yards.
Yeah, I've got to get you over here and show you this area because there's a huge lake. It's got a huge pavilion. It's got the camping
mm.
area. It's got the tent area. It's
wow.
and it's pristine. I mean, that's
wow.
where I go and get all my activity.
Oh wow! Well, that's interesting. Yeah. That sounds like a great staging area. You'd have to have, you know, some kind of like RVs and trailers to be, if people were going to stay there. But I'm sure they have hookups and that kind of thing if they've got a pavilion.
Yeah, that's how this is. It's a mm-hmm. it's a big lake, a big park area for camping
mm-hmm.
and whatnot. But
mm-hmm.
at the same time, mm-hmm. it's surrounded by just thick woods. And,
right.
you know, it's beautiful, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, that sounds great. Sounds like it has a lot of potential.
Well, like I said, if you get over here, I mean, I know that, you know, you'll be in contact or whatever, but if you get over here, I really want to take you out there, show you, but I also want to let you experience what it's like to be out there
mm-hmm.
at night during a Bigfoot
right.
expedition and experience
right.
everything that goes on.
Mhm. Mhm. That would be fun. That'd be great.
So you guys are still planning, still scheduled for a early fall release?
Yes, we are. Because I've got one primary person who's actually been working on the project since the beginning, and very talented Jack Schuyler, director, and he can pretty much do everything. He can direct and edit and all. But I've got two backup people. If he's not able to really do what he needs to do to finish it, then I've got two backup people here in Baton Rouge, and then my son in Dallas who can pitch in and help. So. With the editing, we've still got to do the sound. I've got the Bigfoot. I've got the vocalizations and all. I just have to get permissions. I have to get that signed off, and then we've got to get the music done. But everything else, it's just a matter of tweaking everything out and adding these pickup shots that we filmed back in April and May, which turned out really good. We've just got to add those to the script, and these are all Bigfoot point of view. We realized we didn't really have the Bigfoot point of view. It wasn't written in the script, and things get, you know, control chaos at best when you're producing. So invariably, you're going to have to go back and do pickup shots to fill in the gaps. And we did that, and did about 40 new scenes, and all from Bigfoot point of view. It's like Bigfoot watching the couple come out of the house to go investigate and that kind of thing. So those all still have to be edited.
We discussed that, you and I, in the beginning, and if if that was a factor in the movie. And I'm glad to see that you guys went with that.
And we did have a couple of shots that are Bigfoot points of view in the movie, like one the barn shot. We actually were able to drill a hole in the barn and put the camera in there. But we needed more distant shots, like Bigfoot watching them sit around the fire from a distance. I mean, from quite a distance. And we just didn't shoot any of that. We didn't even think about it until we realized we needed it when the rough cut was done. So that's what we've been doing over the last couple of months, and it's been a lot of fun. And some of the people we used, the original actors from that scene that were local, and some of the others we had to find body doubles for them. Yeah, and that can be a challenge. And then finding the same type of clothes, so making a quick run to Goodwill and as close I could to a match on, you know, and that's just what you do. But I love that. I just would never want to be involved in making a Hollywood film because I love the challenges and just, you know, the necessity of being resourceful on.
Well, it's not just that.
Do with resources.
It's having the control factor also. You know, everything over to someone else and hoping that they get it right.
Yeah, to the men in suits. No, I just, I think the more complicated projects get, the more diluted they become. And some of my best movie experiences have been finding these little gems of surprises in these low-budget independent films, like we've talked about, Letters from the Big Man. Oh, man, that movie just blew me away. I just thought it was just beautifully filmed,
you know,
maybe with a GoPro.
I've still not seen that movie. I've still not seen that movie. Someone was supposed to send it to me, and delay, so I'm not keeping my fingers crossed on it. But, I mean, eventually I hope to. Also, I want to tell you that I know you've heard probably before, I'm friends with Gene St. Jean and Jeff Byers, and they have an action figure line that they're trying to come out with this December. It's Creature Replica. It's the Sasquatch action figures that I've been posting everywhere. I'm hoping that everything goes well for them and they get established. That way, when we get ready for the sequel, we might be able to get them involved and have actually, you know, figures made based on the movie.
You know, I've been really kind of toying with the idea of getting, you know, somebody who can create action figures to create the Skookum action figure to kind of...
There you go.
it's right there. Yeah, and make the figures even like for... Make them for Christmas ornaments, for the tree, you know, and then all kinds of fun things like that. And we can sell them from the Skookum website. And, you know, everybody everybody enjoys the people that want to purchase them, enjoy them, because they're different, unique, and related to the Skookum movie. And then everybody gets to enjoy having been a part of it, you know, financially and otherwise. So.
Yeah, there's a big there's a much bigger demand for it than most people realize, and
I think creating Skookum family, creating like the Skookum action figures the Skookum family to be part of that, you know. So
yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's possible. Gene's a good friend of mine. I'll message him and Jeff and try to see. If they want to bite on it, I'm sure they will, because that crossover helps everybody. You know, you get people in the action figure world who don't know anything about the Skookum movie, and all of a sudden they see these figures and they're like, "Well, I want to go see that movie," and vice versa.
Right.
You know, he gets movie guys buying his toys and interested in them. So mm-hmm. it works out.
Mm-hmm.
It works out for everybody. So
that would be fun. Something to play with there.
But yeah, I'm definitely
going to
push for that.
Commissioning Skookum dolls too. You know, Skookum dolls that are maybe similar to, I don't know, what am I trying to think of right now? You know, just the soft one for smaller children. Maybe the old Cabbage Patch type dolls or something along that line.
Oh, like some kind of furry for younger children.
Exactly. For younger children.
Well, you know,
yeah. like a teddy bear, but the hair is different because obviously it's longer and the shape of the head. It's a teddy skookum.
Well, yeah. I mean that's all I'm sure viable options. I'll pass it by I'll give you their information as well, so that you can contact them also, but. You know,
okay.
And Gene knows. Gene and Jeff both know. From my perspective, I've told them many times that I think it would be so cool, since I'm going to be playing a Sasquatch in the sequel. It'd be so cool to have an action figure of myself as a Sasquatch.
Right. Yeah.
So. Yeah. They know for certain how. I'm dropping hints here and there. So, and I think it's. You know, I'm hoping, you know, I can't speak for Gene or Jeff, but I'm hoping that it's a strong possibility.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And, yeah, I know, I don't know if you're familiar with Michael Hall. He's also making a movie. It's called Something in the Woods.
Well, he was in our movie.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, he's
great actor.
He's coming on for the second half to give an update on their movie. I know that he is also talking to Gene and Jeff and wanting to have figures made for his movie as well. So I know that it's a strong possibility, you know, and I'm going to be pushing for it. And I don't know. Gene is probably even listening right now to the show. But, yeah, Gene, if you are listening, this is it, man. We got to run with this. This is where it's at for everybody. But you know, I talked to Mike. He was on week before last. I didn't have a show last, but I did talk to Mike. He called in and he's saying that possibly around this time next year. When everything is going to start for the sequel. Is that a good assessment?
That's why, in fact, I just sent an email to our director, and I told him, I said, you know, if we come out the gates running with Skookum, you know, what we're working on right now with Skookum the Hunt for Bigfoot, I could feasibly see us, you know, in April 2015, bringing our whole core group essentially back in. You know, our same sound guy, our same directors, our same makeup person. I mean, because they're wonderful and they work, everybody works so well together. No matter what happens, this group is so strong together and they're just immensely talented people and I would want to work with them again. And, of course, some of the same actors. I know Jeff Melvin's going
to
come back. And
I can't wait
Mike
to meet
Woolley,
you.
Of course.
I can't wait to meet everyone. You know,
wonderful. I mean, it's just so much energy on the set. You know, there's so much energy. And it's like the biggest, I guess it's the biggest adrenaline rush you could ever imagine. And it just lasts for 3 weeks. And, of course, you're exhausted when it's over, but exhilarating. All you can think about is doing it again.
I can't wait to be involved. I can't wait to strap that suit on. And Mr. Mike is all telling me, you're going to be sweating your butt off and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, hey, I'll be loving it the whole time.
That's why we do it in April and not July.
Yeah, that's right.
Because, you know, it's just, oh, gosh. It's just too hot, and I think April's perfect month to do it.
I've got to get you guys.
I'm glad
we did it last
year.
Aside from the tornadoes that always seem to happen in April, yeah. I got to get you over.
You know,
here.
And we just had the perfect year because the water was the perfect level. It was warm and yet it was cold. The night that we filmed the swamp scene, the temperature had dropped about 30 degrees suddenly,
right.
And there was fog all over the swamp.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's
absolutely stunning, you know, and it takes your breath away. It's
yeah,
just unbelievable.
We were just fortunate.
This year, it flooded out there in April, and
right.
I'm just so glad that we weren't filming this year. I'm glad we did it last year. So.
Right. When me and Melissa had that roar incident, that happened at the end of March, and it was freezing cold that night. You know,
I mean,
we were out. Yeah, it was. So, yeah, I mean, especially if you're going to be doing a lot of night shots here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm pretty much on the same parallel as Falk. In this area, we have warm days and very cool or cold nights. So, yeah, I think April's good. I got to get you here, and I got to show you this area, because I'm telling you, you'll fall in love.
I can't wait to see it. Wow.
You'll fall in love with it. I've got Johnny, who else? Johnny, I think Doyle, I think Brian, Greg Moret, those guys. They're all they're planning to come over here and do an expedition with me here. In September or whatever. I've also got another friend, Donnie, who's going to be coming up in a couple of weeks. You know, so it's a great area. Every time, every time, but most every time I go out there, Debbie, I get something happen. I get some kind of audio, mind you, but I get something happen. Last week was so awesome. I mean, these things, I had branches breaking in a semicircle all around me. And I'm not talking just snap, snip here and there. I'm talking like a heavy branch, like hitting the ground, like being slammed on the ground. So, you know, I continued on and I go to, I'm making my way back towards my house, which is about 2 miles away. So I continue going. I stop in another little area. I'm out there 1 o'clock in the morning, and there was, you know, full moon. So I'm stopping in the areas where the moon is shining through the trees, and I can see really well.
Right.
So I stop there, and I hear what sounds like the wind blowing, but there's no wind hitting me. And I'm looking at all the other trees, and there's no wind on any of those. And so I kind of glanced to the area that I'm hearing this from, and it was a small tree, probably only about maybe 20 foot tall, and it was just shaking back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh,
so I said,
wow.
Okay, well, I guess it's time for me to go. So I start leaving, and I get probably 100, 200 yards up the road, and I yawn deliberately, and I do it very loudly, intentionally. And this is recorded. I have this posted. Shortly after the yawn, you hear whack. You hear some, you know, wood knock. Something
wow.
to very clearly hit the side of a tree. And I'm like, whoa, that was awesome. So I keep walking, and timing it, another 7 minutes goes by. And that's when I start hearing howls, which I recorded as well.
Wow.
Which is funny because I was leaving the area because I wasn't getting any activity, and I'm thinking, okay, it's a dead night. And I was actually leaving the area, and I heard howls, and I turned around and went back, you know, because I'd heard these howls so many times before at a distance. And so this night I was like, you know what, I'm not going to walk away from it. I'm going to go there. I'm going to go in that direction this time, and I'm going to try to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a lot of activity. And I really feel like they escorted me out of there, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They will let you in.
based on what happened that night, I feel like the tree knock is more of a territorial thing because it happened right after I yawned. It kind of a way, in my mind, now this is just my opinion, of course, it was kind of my way of them telling each other, hey, the human's still around, he's still in our area.
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
the howls, which came 7 minutes later, 7 minutes further down the road, I think that was their way of saying, all's clear. You know, thinking that I was completely gone and out of the area and everything was safe, that's when they started the howls again. So, you know, I've been thinking mm-hmm. about that a lot, and it's pretty interesting. I could see where that they would do those sounds to let each other know
mm-hmm.
when danger is near or when it's safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I was getting orange eye shine. I saw four different sets of orange eye shine, all at varying
wow.
heights. And what's weird is the minute you put your headlamp on them, they duck behind a tree.
Mm-hmm.
Just that fast.
Wow.
So it was very interesting. And last night I went out and I set the recorder out and came home. And
mm-hmm.
I listened to it a little bit. And there's another tree knock on it, which I have to clean up and edit, cut it down to where that's the only thing you hear. And I'll post that soon. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, there's
mm-hmm.
and I looked on Google Earth, and that whole area is closed off. There's gates. It's on the wildlife refuge, and there's gates closing that whole area off. That's a whole now, mind you, there's a hell of a lot more woods, like 50 miles of woods or something like that. But this one little area where I have all the activity is a 5-mile area. That's 5 miles before you in any direction before you get to a house.
Uh-huh.
Of nothing but woods.
Wow. Yeah.
And that's how
the area in central Louisiana was that Mike and I went to research those two women who were being terrorized. And
yeah.
it's just way out in the boonies, 5 miles, either which way. And they had been
right,
just terrorized.
Well, nightly. What I'm talking about, when I say 5 miles, it's just a 5-mile patch of woods. Now there's gravel
mm-hmm.
roads further, you know, along that 5-mile border. And then there's more woods
mm-hmm.
after that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I got to thinking, okay, maybe there's someone living in this area. So I actually drove completely around the area, and gate
mm-hmm.
closed here, gate closed there. The closest road in that direction is like I said, about 5 miles, and there's only one house way back on the field in it. So
mm-hmm.
it's a pretty secluded area, and.
Mm-hmm.
This activity that I've gotten has been over the last six years. I had gotten what sound like the Sierra sound, the samurai chatter. Me and my
mm-hmm.
girlfriend's daughter were out there one day and we heard that. And only within the last year or so have I been going out there at night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And only since March have I been going out there every week at night. So it's, you know, I'm building up, and I really feel like, and I was talking to someone else today, I really feel like these things are used to me. They see me out there both during the day and at night. So I think in my mind, and this is all speculation, of course, I really feel like they familiarize themselves with me enough to say, oh, it's just this guy. He means us no harm. And I really
exactly.
think that has a lot to do with the closeness of their approaches and the encounters. I've never felt threatened. You know, I've never felt threatened out there or like
right.
my life was in danger or anything like that. Even when Melissa and I had that close roar, it scared us,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't feel threatened like we're going to die.
Right, exactly.
Just more of a, hey, I'm here. Don't come any closer. You know, that was the type of...
Mm-hmm.
It
was just
impression.
A warning, you know.
Right, right,
yeah.
exactly. And, you know, I tell people, you know, I was talking to people today, and they're like talking about all this howling and wood knocking. I don't do any of that when I go out there. You know, all that finding Bigfoot bull crap. Because, first of all, you don't know what you're telling
mm-hmm.
them. You know, you don't know
right.
what all that means to them. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
when I go out there, I just go out there as quietly as I can be. And like I told these guys today, If they want to interact with you, they will find you. They will come to you. You know, you don't have to do all
well,
the house.
No. When we did the interview with Bob Gimlin back in the fall of 2010 at the Texas Bigfoot Research Conservancy Conference, he basically said, if you really are intent on having any kind of communication with Bigfoot or any kind of encounter, he said, go into it without that expectation. Don't go into it hunting, quote, for Bigfoot. Go into it just enjoying nature and appreciating what that being might, you know, be. But don't get intense about it. Just enjoy your walk in the woods and whatever, and that's when it's most likely to happen. It's when you're not looking for it.
Well, that's pretty much what I do. Because I tried doing the howls and wood knocks and that crap, and I would hear things in the distance, and every time I did that, everything just went dead quiet. It's almost like they said, that's a human.
They're way too smart for that. I mean, they're just way – I mean, we think we are so smart, you know, and that we know everything and that we can outsmart them and we can hunt them down. In many ways, I believe that certain parts of their brain is much more highly developed than ours, you know.
Right.
Why they've been able to remain elusive over, you know, over such a long period of time. And
I envy them. I mean, to me, I've said this many times before, and I'll say it again. To me, they're living the correct way. At one with their surroundings and the world around them, you know. And now when I go, I just walk. I don't walk looking for them. I don't make all these sounds and noises. I just almost as if I'm on a leisurely walk, like you would during the day, a leisurely hike, and that's what I do. But I do it at night, or I will just sit down and just sit there, like I'm minding my own business, and that's all this stuff and that, to me, in my opinion, for my area. Now those other approaches might work in different areas, but for my area, that is the best way I have found to get interaction. Because they know you're there.
Well, and I think if you think about the Native Americans and Indian tribes of, you know, long past, and their reports of encounters and their relationships at one time with Bigfoot. The Native Americans live very close to nature too, and some of them still do. And so it is very likely that the Bigfoot, you know, at one time felt comfortable interacting with the Native Americans as human beings because
it's funny. They
live side by side. You know, now they can't afford to because we're so ready to pull up a gun and shoot it either for profit or because...
Well, here's another example. And I made this long post on this site. I left the site because it pissed me off and they deleted my post because some guys started some racist crap. But here's the thing. Perhaps at one point in time, because, I mean, if you look back in the reports... But the early settlers, they were finding these things on the East Coast as well, and if you think about what Europeans did when or white man, if you will, did when we first came over, is we pushed our way westward. Perhaps we may have some part in driving them westward to the western more western areas. Because, I mean, and people say, oh, that's, you know, people can say, oh, that's stupid. Oh, yeah, it's stupid. Look what we did to the Indians. Look what we did to the Native American tribes. You know, we've always been a shoot first, worry about the consequences later.
Exactly. We're trigger happy.
So, yeah, exactly.
Speaking, you
so
know,
it's not too far of a reach to think that maybe we're the reason they went into hiding. You know, because we know from records that there was a lot of interaction between them and Native American tribes.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it kind of dwindled off. Now, there still may be, and we know that the Native American tribes are very secretive.
But, oh, of course, there's, and there's a reason to be. I did encounter, when I was working in Texarkana for 7 years, there was a Native American guy. I can't remember what tribe he was from. But he was in charge of all the secret historical documents in the
right.
tribe. And I was talking to him about our movie, and he goes, oh, yes, we have some documentation. But he couldn't show me or reveal anything to me because it was very secret, and they were very protective of it. But they had, their tribe had had experiences with Sasquatch, and it was documented in whatever form they documented.
If you could make a movie, Debbie, from a Native American point of view regarding Sasquatch, I think you'd have a major hit there also. Imagine Dances with Wolves mm-hmm. plus Sasquatch in it, or Last of the Mohicans
right.
plus Sasquatch in it. Yeah, I know yeah. I would definitely be in line to see that.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing is, getting the trust of these tribes to where they divulge their secret information, because you want to make it as factual as you can.
Right.
And that's where the hurdle will be, is getting that factual information and gaining the trust of these elders and of these record keepers with these tribes. And if you can get that and make a script or storyline off of that, I think you got a hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be interesting.
Especially if you can set it towards in the earlier time period, before the settlement of white men and before all that interaction, somewhere along in there.
Right. Mhm.
I think that would be a great movie.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, it would be good. It would definitely be a challenge.
Listen,
when you come,
I don't know if you still got my number or not. I'll make sure you have it. But when you come back to Mississippi, definitely let me know. I will go and I will meet you.
Okay.
And I will take you and I'll show you around. You know, and
okay.
I'll take you. And if Mike can come with you, that would be so awesome. Also, I'll take you guys
okay.
out there with me at night, and let you experience what I experience. And I think that will help you also in regards to the whole movie aspect, because
right.
you'll know what it feels like to actually be out there at night with these things around you.
Exactly.
And, yeah, I mean,
and
that invitation is there.
And we would be able to figure out, yeah, that would be awesome. We could figure out what technology we would need would be the best to capture that, so that the audience would feel like they are there, yeah, because that's, I think that is the one of the most important aspects of the new age in filmmaking, is being able to use technology that can make people feel like they have, you know, a
right,
very
without,
close
without getting too Blair Witch, yeah, without getting too Blair Witch style, you know, with the whole shaky,
well, the shaky
handheld.
The shaky handheld camera has its place, and we do have that on some of the pickup shots, you know, because it made it feel like more, because the whole thing that we did
it adds a first
whoever
person
held the camera
aspect.
Was right. was Bigfoot, and Bigfoot's going to be moving stealthily and kind of, you know, shaking as he goes along.
See, that
that
makes
was
sense.
Intentional. But if you have a whole movie that's with a handheld, it's going to hurt your viewers' eyes. They're just going to get weary. So you don't want that throughout the whole film. You want to do your steady cam, whether you're using a GoPro camera or whether you're using a Red camera or whatever. And you're going to have places where you're going to want to use tracks. You're going to want to have the perspective. Somebody, I don't know who it is, made some kind of statement about, you know, in these very flexible cameras like the GoPro, you're going to be able to, and I don't own stock, by the way, I'm not trying to push them, but But you have your the mouse point of view where you're on the ground. You've got
right.
the worm point of view where you want to, you know, plunge out of the dirt, whether somebody's been hiding beneath a
yeah.
trap or something, and they just come out or come out from under the water. You know,
you want
the eagle point of view.
That's right.
Where you got your drone with your camera on there. And so this makes the audience feel like they're just able to get everything that, you know, it makes them feel drawn into.
Yeah.
It gives them a very
different feel. If you can position the camera behind the head of the Sasquatch, kind of like over his shoulder where you get part of the side of his head and that's it, that'd be
mm-hmm.
perfect too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are you guys using a certain filter when you show the Sasquatch point of view?
We've got the
like the movie Predator where
it's a filter that's actually on the Adobe Premiere Pro editing system, and it's, I can't remember what it's called, but it reddens it out. It just kind of, every time
right.
you see from the, like there's one scene where they're, and it's a flashback scene where the missing girl, it's a flashback to her childhood. And it's
mm-hmm.
when her parents get the phone call, because they're Bigfoot researchers, and they get the phone call in the middle of the night to go out and investigate a Bigfoot sighting that's down the road a ways.
Right.
And, right now, the scene that exists in the rough-cutted film is the whole scene you see inside the house, you know, the living room, basically.
Right.
And then you see, you know, you see the phone ringing, and then you see them talking to the little girls and saying, you lock up and, you know, be safe and don't watch scary movies while we're gone and blah, blah, blah. Well, since we did the Bigfoot pickup shots, we will cut from the living room scene, which will raise the tension, and it'll make the audience's heart start beating because they see Bigfoot, they're in Bigfoot point of view, and it's all reddened out, and there's this spooky music that's going to signify, you know, you're behind Bigfoot's eyes now. You're seeing through
yeah.
Bigfoot's eyes. And Bigfoot's creeping up on the house, and he eventually is going to look in the window. He's going to see, he's going to hide behind a tree, and he's seeing the parents walk out to the car and take off, and then he kind of follows them, and then he slinks up to the window and looks in. And the little girl looks out and screams. Well, this is all being cut back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have this long monologue, dialogue stuff taking place in the living room. You cut it. And you go outside, and you're in Bigfoot's point of eyes, and then back to the living room, and then back outside. And then the audience starts getting real tense because they know he's out there. Well, before we did the pickup shots, you're only in the living room, and you only know the parents are going to go out and investigate. But you don't have that same kind of scary tension that you have.
See,
with
when you look at like Legend of Boggy Creek, I think the thing that one of the things that helped to creep that out was the breathing. You could hear it breathing as it was
yeah.
approaching.
Yeah, right.
That's a good effect.
Yeah. And we've got that too, you know, the breathing, the heavy breathing. And
right.
so, you know, they did pretty good. I think they could have had probably a little bit more of the point of view of the creature in there, you know, but, I mean, they certainly had enough to raise everybody's tension. And that, what we were missing in our movie, we didn't have enough of the creature point of view. So, because that really increased the good, because the audience wants to scream, oh my gosh, a Bigfoot's outside the window, don't look out, you know, because, you know, everybody's terrified that they're going to look out the window sometime and just see this creature looking in. And that actually happened to, you know, several people that were interviewing.
Oh, yeah.
That. Happened to them. Actually, one of the guys that was a double in the Bigfoot shot had that happen to him when he was 10 years old, and he was at his his grandparents' camp on Caddo Lake where we filmed,
right.
and he was on his top bunk, in the cabin window, and he looked out, and he didn't know anything about Bigfoot at that time, but he just started screaming, and he went and ran and jumped into his grandparents' bed, and he said, "There's a monkey face looking in the window at me. There's a monkey face. Oh, my God,
right.
A monkey face." And that window, I mean, that would have, it would have had to be an 8 to 10 foot person to be able to look straight in the window like that where it was located. So,
well, see, that's
interviewing
thing.
Him for the movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure these things get that same kind of reaction a lot. So I would see why they would tend to want to, you know, stay away, because in their mind they probably caused
right.
a lot of fear in us. And, you know, but see, when I'm out there, I don't give those reactions when something happens near me or around me. I just act like calm, like almost like I didn't even notice it. And I think that
but
in
that
itself,
would be hard for some people,
right,
not to react when they're not expecting it and they don't know anything or they've never heard of it.
Well, right, I think
you know,
for me,
they would go.
I think for me, I understand.
I know I
that.
Would.
Right. I think for me, I understand that they're out there in the daytime also, just as well as at night. You know, yeah, they may be more active at night, but you can bet that if you make enough noise and they're close enough proximity to you, they know you're there. You
right.
know? So if they really want to do people, humans, harm, they have plenty of opportunities to do that.
Yes.
You see, so I don't... You know, and there's all this crap going on with the whole missing hikers and whatever. You know, a lot of people like to try to blame everything on Sasquatch or something, a boogeyman. You know what? The biggest boogeyman I've ever encountered in my life are humans.
That's kind
you know?
Of the theme of our movie.
The scariest, yeah, the scariest monsters I've ever encountered.
What's the most dangerous creature known to me?
And one of the scariest monsters I've ever encountered was my own father. So, you know, don't come at me with this whole
oh, wow.
boogeyman in the woods, you know.
Right. Boogeyman is in the next room.
That's right. They're a lot closer than you than the woods, believe me.
Right.
So, you know, I just don't see them as being that way, because I believe that there's so many opportunities presented to them that they could do harm to humans, that
mm-hmm.
they could kill, maul, maim, that,
mm-hmm.
and they don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, sure, there
right.
may be some that are a little mental, a little psycho. There's maybe some that are inbred, you know, which may cause
mm-hmm.
different temperaments, and different locations as well may cause different
right.
temperaments. And in the case of Mike Woolley, the weapon... the fact that he interrupted the
mm-hmm.
hunt, that territorial aspect of it. There's a
mm-hmm.
lot of different factors. I also believe that the lack of cover changes how they interact and react towards humans.
Right.
For
mm-hmm.
example, some that live in more sagebrush areas like Arizona, I've been reading about those. They seem to be a little bit more aggressive. I think that so many factors play into it. And yeah, you're taking a chance. But in my case, I've been out there so many times and heard these things and had interaction. And I don't mean interaction like shake your hand, you know, let's exchange phone numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about that. But back and forth noises here and there that I think that they become accustomed and familiarized with me being out there. That's speculation,
right.
of course, but that's just the feeling that I get.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Like I said, I would love for you guys to – and you mentioned earlier also about audio, about Bigfoot sounds. When you get out here, I'll do my Bigfoot sounds for you and see what you think
okay.
about that.
Okay.
But,
awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
Seriously, Debbie, I love you guys to death. I'm glad to be involved with this and especially with the sequel. And I really want you guys to come out and I'd love to be able to take you out there and show you the area and let you experience what it is to be out there at night.
Awesome. That would be so much fun. We'll definitely do that. But that's
definitely
on the agenda.
I hear you. Definitely let me know. And I'm going to talk more with Gene and Jeff about the possibility of the action figure line, getting that involved, and I'll get in touch with you on that and relay some information there as well. And I know you have to get going. I appreciate you calling in, and hopefully now when did you say it was slated for release, the first one?
September 10th.
I got to get you guys on around that time also, and we can promote the hell out of it.
Oh yeah, we'll absolutely do that. And,
okay, well.
You know, one of the things that I'd like to do for our next film is get audience feedback on the first one so we can let them sort of participate in the filmmaking process for the second movie. I think that'd be fun. Yeah,
I mean, we definitely have to listen to what people want to see, you know, that aspect
mm-hmm.
of it
mm-hmm.
as well. But see,
right, exactly.
You have enough. Here's the advantageous part. Is you have enough people involved who actually go out into the field and do this work, do this research.
We do, yeah.
That you can't go wrong. You know, I mean, Johnny, and Brian and Greg and Doyle. Well, I don't know about Doyle because he had to take care of his dad or something. But they're all out there right now in the field. They're going to call in here in a few minutes. So I mean, you know, you've got plenty of people. You know, that you can call on if need be.
Definitely don't hesitate.
I'm always here and I'll help you out as much as I can.
And tell Mike, Hall, howdy, you know, and I'm excited about his movie too.
Oh yeah, he'll be calling in here in a little bit, and Johnny and the guys as well. So I mean, if you can listen, I know it's different. Yeah. I know you have things to take care of and whatever, and I appreciate you calling in.
Oh, well, I've enjoyed it, and I appreciate you having me on.
Okay, hon, take care. I sent you. I think you might have it already, but I sent you my phone number through Facebook.
Okay. Awesome.
And
great.
Let me know when you get around this. Okay, definitely. Take care.
Okay. Thank you, Brian.
All right. That was great. Now I'm going to try to get Michael if he's available. I'm not seeing him online. Hopefully he'll be listening. He'll call in. Johnny, if you guys are listening, you guys can go ahead and call in. And we'll talk to you guys and find out what's going on out there in the field tonight. Yeah, that's real interesting. You guys, I don't know if you picked up on everything, but there's going to be a sequel to the Skookum movie. I'm going to be in it. I'm going to be playing a Sasquatch. I've said this a couple of times before. Really looking forward to that. I'm hoping to bring all my friends and get them involved with it as well. Gene St. Gene with Creature Replica. Jeff Byers with Creature Replica. The Cryptid team that I got. Johnny Holmes. Greg Empey. Greg Moorhead. Doyle. All those guys, get those guys involved in it. And hopefully I can get Debbie over here to look at the area, and she'll like what she sees and could do some filming right here in this area. That would be awesome as well. Because then I can get everybody over here and take them and show them what I see and what I hear. And it would be an awesome get-together. Hey, you're on the air.
Hey, Brian, it's John.
Hey, buddy, how's it going?
All right, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Were you able to listen to that first half?
No, we weren't. We didn't have a computer, and none of us had enough data on our phone.
Oh, of course not. What am I thinking? Duh. Yeah, man. Debbie came on, and she talked a little bit about the movie, talked about you guys in interviews, and get some insightful information on the sequel, and she's wanting to She said she rode through Mississippi. She saw a little bit of it. She loved it, and said she's probably going to be back. And I guess I'm going to get her to come over here and look at the area that I'm in, and I want to take her out, you know, and let her experience it at night. I think it would better give her a better understanding of what it's like to be out there at night with these things going on around you.
Yeah. Well, I'm here.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm here with the entire team at the Sofa River Bottom. I got Greg here, Brian Impey, Ruth, Arlie Everett, and Tammy and myself.
Oh, awesome. Tell everyone I said hello, and I'm very honored to have them on board and you know, to have them as friends, and you know, I'm glad to have you guys representing.
Well, you're on speaker, so they can hear you.
Oh, great. So, I'm about to get a cacophony of hellos. So you guys, when did you guys get out there? You got out there tonight or last night?
No, we got here yesterday about, I guess, around 2 in the afternoon.
Did you have anything going on last night?
Well, last night was kind of interesting in the fact that I forgot to bring what I was going to bring for dinner last night, so I had to make a run into town to get some Chicken Express. Me and Greg went into town.
Hey, man, y'all are supposed to be survivors. What the hell, man? Eat like Bigfoot eat. Come on.
He's roughing it. We have to use our fingers.
Come on. Oh, there you go. At least that's a plus, you know. Come on, man. I'm starting to lose a little faith in y'all, man.
So, anyway, Greg and I left, and Harley and Ruth and Brian is out here. And well, Brian, you tell the story. You were here.
Bottom line is both Ruth and I were sitting there, and Arlie was doing a little something, and we really heard some serious sounds, and there's no moon out, and so I was getting up, and Ruth was kind of just go ahead and sit there. Me and Arlie has a better light, and we went over there, and he saw a raccoon climbing on one of the screens and took off running, and we seen all kinds of eyes down there, a raccoon surrounding us, and the very time that we saw that, we were, I must say, 50 yards from a 21, 22-foot, probably 5, 6-inch diameter limb cracked and fell out of the tree, and we thought Armageddon was happening because he shined that light and kabloom, and we saw it, and oh, my God, and then another raccoon was on the other side. Reese kind of hollering and running all over the place. So all the chaos was happening, and we kind of was being attacked a little bit.
Did y'all have open food containers out there or something to attract the raccoons?
I don't think so. Did we?
No. We did. We did have food containers, but everything was packed up. We hadn't unpacked anything, and that was because I forgot what we were going to have for dinner. So me and Greg were gone was to get the chicken.
All right. We had nothing, no food out. But these things were just, I guess, routine, coming up to a campsite, climbing all over these netted pavilion things that he had set up. So it was kind of crazy. It was nerve-wracking, to say the least.
That's what it sounds like. It sounds like they've familiarized humans with food. Somebody must have been out there feeding them or something at one point in time.
Yeah, at some point we had about 2 or 3 on one side, 2 or 3 on the other. Just eyes everywhere. It was kind of crazy.
And they had no fear of us at all.
Yeah, so, yeah. We
were just basically in their way.
Climbing the tent.
Yeah, they had then lost their fear of humans. You know, somebody obviously was out there feeding them. Oh, look, this is cute. You know, something like that.
Yeah, we were. When we finally went to bed, I guess it was right around 1 or 1 or so in the morning. As soon as everybody zipped up in a tent or whatever and got laid down, and all kinds of stuff outside, you hear them moving around, and We have this little screen house we're in right now where we had ate the chicken, and we had the plates that we were going to wash in the morning after we did the breakfast dishes. And they got in here somehow, and I had a trash can. I didn't really have anything in it but plastic, paper towels and stuff.
Oh, they smelt that. Yeah, they smelt that residue of that food on those plates.
Yeah. They got in here and knocked the plates off the table and turned the trash can over, but they didn't really do any damage. They didn't do any damage to the screen house,
now,
which is what I'm worried about.
Is that where you guys are doing the investigation, or is that just your base camp and you're going somewhere else out there?
This is our base camp. We've had vocalizations here before. This is actually at the same location where I got Greg and I got gifted last April. And,
I think you showed me the pictures of that. I'm just concerned with the amount of wildlife activity and raccoons that might be an indicator that there's no Sasquatch there at the time.
Yeah, I'm sure there's not. As the season gets more into summer,
right,
other people come camping here too, so I'm sure they know that around. But this is really just this time is just our base camp.
Right, that's what I was
saying. We set up a baiting area earlier that's probably 5 or 6 miles from here. Then we went to the place where I found the track a couple of weeks ago, but it's rained so much it washed that road out, and I couldn't get down there in my pickup truck. So Arlie's got a four-wheel drive Jeep. We're going to go back there tomorrow and try to set up a baiting area there. There's a bunch of wild berries in that area that they like to eat, that the Sasquatches like to eat. And
blackberries are in the prime right now.
Yeah, they pretty much clean those out, so we thought we'd take our bait thing over there and put it up and see if we can get. And because the road's so messed up, there's very little human traffic over there at all. So,
wow, man, I got to get you guys over here. I definitely got to get you guys over here, and I think you guys would have a blast. I mean, hey, you're out there doing it, man. That's what matters, you know.
Yeah.
We're not going to get what we're looking for sitting at home on the couch. That's for damn sure.
And as I've said many times, and you have too, even if we're here together, even if we don't hear nothing or see anything or get anything, we're here together having a good time. So
that's right. You know, even if like me for example, even if I go out and I don't get any activity at all, hey, I'm enjoying a nice walk. I'm getting exercise. I'm out there walking and enjoying a nice walk in the woods, you know, what the hell, it's, you know, you're really not losing fresh air, you know.
Yeah.
But I know you guys have been keeping track of what I've been having going on here and posting over on the website. The other night, right beside me, man, I told you about this, Johnny. It just took off and down the ravine, and I caught like the back of the head and the upper part of the shoulders, but that was it. And I didn't even know it was there, and that's what freaked me out. I was that close to it, didn't even know, and I really feel like they hide, and you know, along a clearing or tree line or whatever, scoping it out, looking for deer or any kind of food. And I feel like that's what it was doing. Same as when me and Melissa got that roar, we snuck up behind it, and I feel like that's what it was doing, was looking over that deer plot.
Yeah. That's cool. What color was the hair was that?
It was a grayish tan.
Okay.
You know, of course, it happened so, I mean, I turned my headlamp on, and that's all I saw. I mean, it was almost a coyote color.
No, okay.
But then last night I did something different. You and I had talked, and I talked to Michael Hall, who is in the queue right now, and I'm going to bring him on shortly. We talked to him the last time. Hold on a second. Stop, cat. Cat's trying to get my headphone wire. But we had talked to him about setting the bait out there and just leaving the recorder. And I know you remember when I talked to you on the phone the other day, I told you I was kind of skeptical about that, you know, because I didn't want to leave my stuff out there, you know. Well, last night I actually did that. I found a little area that was close enough to the activity area that had kind of a cover in case it started raining. So I left it out there, and I left it out there for about an hour. And I listened to a little bit of it, and I know I got a tree knock. I'll have to get in there and edit that and post that. But I need to finish listening to it more and see if I can get anything. And what's odd is the last several times that I've been out there, and Melissa's been out there, her daughter, my son at the time, most of our activity takes place after midnight.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they feel, okay, that's when most humans are non-existent out there or what, and that's okay, safe to go crazy and do our thing. But that's how it happens for us here.
Yeah.
It's after midnight, you know, when you know there's really no other. I mean, they're probably thinking I must be an idiot because I'm out there, you know, in the middle of the morning by myself. But
Hey Brian.
Yeah.
This is Greg.
Hey, bud.
Here in this area, we tend to hear like a lot of really good vocalizations, like more around 3 a.m.
Right. And at night,
it's pretty consistent too.
Right. I know you read my post, and I know you've listened to the audio that I posted. That actually started about 1:30, and
yeah. My
last encounter was those two howls that I posted, and that was about 3 o'clock in the morning. I got home at 3 o'clock in the morning, and it's just a 2-mile walk, you know, from my house. So, And you know, I thought about that last night when I set my recorder out. I'm like, well, maybe I'm setting it out too early. So I think what I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to go a little bit later and set it out.
Go ahead.
I might even set my peanut butter jar out there too to hopefully increase it. But see, the thing that's bad about that is I know that that'll attract other wildlife. And I want to be careful not to attract raccoons and stuff like that and get those on my audio and think, okay, that's a Sasquatch. I don't want to make that mistake, you know?
It is easy. I've listened to Michael Hall's recordings on his website, and he has what they call walk-up recordings, and you can tell definitely something with two legs is walking up there.
Well, see, I could hear that on this recording last night, too, but to me, it's not definitive enough for me to put out there and say, okay, here it is. This is a, you know, a Sasquatch. So,
right,
you know.
He doesn't say that on his.
Yeah. In fact, let's bring Michael on with us. I'm pretty sure this is him in the queue. Michael, is that you?
Hey, guys. Yeah.
Hey, buddy.
Yeah,
it's me.
Hey, Mike, how you doing? Michael?
Hey, I'm doing good.
I don't know if you've been listening. Yeah, I know. I appreciate you coming on. I don't know if you've been listening to the show up to now, but we were talking about, you know, the whole baiting and leaving the recorder out there.
Right. You know, the thing of it is that when we go out and we bait, if you go and buy the little individual serving cups of peanut butter.
Mm-hmm.
And then that has the little tin foil lid on it, you know. And you peel
right.
that back and just use the lid itself to scoop the peanut butter out and then wipe it onto the limbs and the leaves.
Yeah, I do that. But I do it with the jar.
Yeah. Right.
Now, see, someone had said, I don't know who it was, but I think it was you, Michael. Someone had said, maybe it was Johnny, to wipe the peanut butter around the lid and just loosen the lid just a little bit on a big jar of peanut butter.
Oh, yeah, because But, you know, the thing about it is raccoons are pretty tricky. They can,
that's exactly
they can
my
figure
hopes.
Out. They can take that top off there. They can
that's,
figure it out.
That's exactly my thoughts also.
Yeah, and but that's, you know, we really have had so many recordings and things that we've come up with. I mean, we can pretty much tell, and we try to put a camera at the same location, maybe not right next to the recorder, maybe on a tree across from it. That way we can, if it's a raccoon or anything, we can verify. We've had some strange things, though. I mean, like that cough recording. I don't know if Johnny or any of those guys have listened to the what we call the cough sequence that's on the website, where we actually
right.
had it come up and, you know, and I think I've described it before. But we had a camera on another tree pointed right at it. And
yeah, see, that's
now,
that would probably be the most ideal thing to do.
Yeah, and now here's the weird thing. Out of 8 cameras we had placed out, that was the only one that malfunctioned. We had it didn't take any pictures.
Wow.
Somebody's cat.
Well, where?
I don't know what that was. I hope that wasn't somebody's impression of a Sasquatch.
No, that was somebody tipping the screen door on our screen house. So.
Oh.
I was like, man, if that's what you guys are doing out there, good luck.
we're
probably,
trying a new baiting thing tonight.
That sounds like a sausage.
Oh, really? Cool.
Butt plugged.
This is something I thought of. I don't know if it's ever been done before or not, but I know of 2 reports. Greg had gone with our friend Brad, who's in the BFRO, to investigate a guy in Oklahoma. Greg, tell him that story real quick.
So we were west of Marietta, Oklahoma. A guy had reported tracks coming across his outdoor rodeo arena, and right next to his arena, he had a feed room and tack room. And so he called the BFRO to see if somebody could come out and come check out the tracks and see if they were the real thing. And so I had an opportunity to go with a couple of the members out there. And well, the tracks were amazing, but the thing had broken into the feed room and tack room and had kind of made a huge mess, as you can imagine, and had eaten a lot of the sweet feed. So Johnny had gotten the idea from that particular report and another one to maybe use sweet feed as bait. Sweet feed is it's a molasses and grain mixture that you feed horses. And so anyway, I'll let Johnny continue now.
Yeah, well, I got
Can I interject real quick?
Sure.
I know, and I've thought about you doing this. I know that, especially in hunting season, they sell the big bags of corn, but they also have this syrup that's like an apple scented syrup. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it or whatever. I thought about actually using some of that and setting it out. I'm pretty sure I could still get it this time of year. But we have a question in the chat room from Donnie. You guys know Donnie. He's in our group. He says, what about taking sardines and putting it in a bait bag and hanging it from a tree limb? I would think that would work. I know that from reports that I've read that they are really attracted to this catfish bait, this real stinky, stinky catfish bait.
Yeah,
I never even thought about that.
And you know, hey man, you know, I'm not the richest person in the world, so I got to go as cheap as I can, you know. But the report I posted today, which took place in 79, it was from very close to me here in Mississippi. This lady in her report, I don't know if you guys read it or not, but she claimed that the Sasquatch was attracted. She had barbecue in her car. And when he smelled, she saw it cross the road, and when he smelled the barbecue, she had her windows down. Of course, this is 79. You know, you didn't have the power windows and all that stuff. When he smelled that barbecue, he stopped and turned towards her. And you could, and she could see him, you know, raising his head, sniffing. So, you know, I think that for that part, you know, we know that barbecue sauce has the molasses in it as well. So I think that might play a factor there, whether it was the meat that attracted it or whether it was actual barbecue sauce molasses smell itself. I don't know, but
I was at work one night, and my brother Doyle, who, sorry, he can't be here, he's got some kind of infection, he's running the temperature and stuff, but
right.
He texted me one night when I was at work, I guess it's about 11:30, and he said that in a text that something grabbed his, he had just fed his horse, and something grabbed his horse feeder and drug it out in the woods. And he went out and found it, and didn't have any feed in it and stuff. And I said, well, what'd you have in there as feed? And he said, that's sweet pea. So that made two of those reports I heard involved.
Now, are you guys saying sweet pea as in peas or sweet feed?
No, feed as in F-E-E-D.
Okay, all right, that's what I thought.
It's horse feed.
Yeah, you know, well, I mean, so many reports talk about, you know, sightings where people see these things near their deer feeders eating the corn out and things of that nature. So, you know, we've all said, and we all kind of agree that these things are opportunistic omnivores. You know, if it's food and it's there, I can't see them passing it up. I know if I was out there in the woods, you know, trying to survive, I would take any food that I could get.
Well, we took some and poured it in a 5-gallon bucket and hung it up in a tree. So,
right.
I suppose a raccoon could get to it or a possum or anything else, but nothing on the ground like a holler can get to
right.
it. So.
And you're saying, and this is what you did right now while you guys are out there?
Yeah. We just did it. You remember when I texted you and said we were going to go set up a baiting area? That's what we did.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
As soon as the show's over tonight, we're going to go back out there and hang a recorder.
Awesome. Well, while I have Michael on, Michael, we want to get an update on your movie, Something in the Woods, while we have you on.
Oh, yeah.
Johnny, you guys just hang tight because I'm going to get back to you here in a sec. Don't go anywhere because your input and feedback is very welcome. Michael, go ahead and give us a rundown, an update on what's going on there. I know that you talked to Gene.
Well,
Gene told me that he had spoke with you.
Yeah. We're, you know, the filming is done. The movie is in, as we say in the business, the movie's in the can. It's all the scenes are shot. We're in post-production now, which can be a more daunting task in a lot of ways.
You guys are rolling, man. I mean, you guys are zipping along.
Well, we had a very short shoot schedule, and but what that means is that you're working 15, 16 hours a day.
Right. I remember talking to you a couple of nights, and you were just getting in.
Yeah, it's just, it was, you know, and there were times when we would start our day at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and we wouldn't get back to the hotel until 6 or 7 o'clock the next morning, you know, shooting all night. And, you know, and I can't stress enough, this is not the typical Bigfoot movie that you're going to see on the Sci-Fi Channel.
I hope not.
Really,
you know, I had hopes.
A lot of hours.
I had hopes for that movie, Willow Creek. I guess that's the Bobcat Goldthwait movie. And I haven't seen it. But I've talked to a lot of people who have. One was Donnie, and that was just last night. And even he said it sucked. So you know, I'm so tired, man. I'm so tired of these movies that, you know, the stupid plot lines, stupid stories, and crappy interpretations of what a Sasquatch really is.
Well, that's the thing. That's the key to what we think is going to be successful for our film, is that in the creature suit design, we went through the guy who actually did the suit and everything spent weeks going through actual Bigfoot sighting reports, and
right.
He talked to me a lot, and we traded back and forth, traded some artwork and pictures and things, and really try to encapsulate what people have reported seeing. Then in the story, and of course this is a fictional story about this family, and what happens to this family is you basically have the man of the house. He's a logger. He's down to earth. He's a Christian guy, and he doesn't believe in fairy tales and boogeyman and that kind of thing.
Right.
And all of a sudden, this Sasquatch comes up to his home, and the youngest child in the family, who is like six, is the first to see it, and he calls it the Hairy Man. And what you find out through the course of the story is that the child is the one that's empathetic and sympathetic to the creature, and he's like, well, he just wants to play, and he has this childlike, what a child would be. He has no fear of what this, thing could do. The adults in the situation immediately go into a fearful mode, and the dad is trying to figure out how to protect his family from something he doesn't understand. And
that kind of reminds me of a movie. It kind of reminds me of a movie that I had bought from my little girl, thinking it was going to be something good. The movie was crap. It's called Cry Wilderness. I don't know if you guys have seen it or not. It's a horrible movie, but she liked it, and
I don't want to come across sound like a crappy movie.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying the whole child involvement with the Sasquatch. No,
right.
They just did that movie real horrible, but from what you're saying, I have no doubts that you guys are going to actually do it justice.
Oh yeah, and so what we tried to do in the plot line of the story is include a lot of things like vocalizations, tree knocks. We even discover a tree structure out in the woods behind the farm, and there's tracks. We see the tracks. Even a big muddy handprint on the bedroom window. Things like that have been reported, and we put all of this into this. We included all this into the storyline. So I think that when people see this, and the other thing that we did is the way we filmed when we were filming shots of the creature itself.
Yeah.
About 95% of anything that includes the creature in a scene, it's only a quick glimpse or a just something real, not out of focus, but something that something was there, but you can't really tell what it was. And I mean, it was big and it was hairy, and it was, kind of want to give the audience the feeling of what it might be like if they actually saw one for themselves. They can't really describe, other than it was big, it was hairy, and it was really fast, and it that kind of thing. Until the end of the film, when you finally get this full-on view. And we've tried to really keep it a mystery throughout the story. And I've watched I spent a lot of time with the executive producer while we were filming, because we had to keep, you know, such as this was all shot in HD and it was all digital. We had to keep dumping the SD cards from the cameras into a couple of external hard drives and then going through and organizing all the scenes from that particular day. So basically we were watching all these scenes on a daily basis, every take. And sometimes we had, you know, 8, 10, 12 takes on one scene. But to see those things as, you know, what we were filming, there's no way I can honestly say that people are not going to enjoy this. I think it's something for everybody.
That sounds like a great way to do it. You know, I think back to all the other movies in the past, Jaws, all the different movies, and right now, right in fact, as recently as I think yesterday, they came out and said that they're going to do another Predator sequel, and I'm reading the comments, and a lot of people are like, oh, it's not going to work. You know, what made Predator so good, the first one, was the fact that there was that mystery behind it. You didn't know what was doing all this. You didn't see the creature until the very end. And now people know all about it and what it looks like, so they don't think it worked. But that got me to thinking, you know, they're right. That is what kind of made that movie, set that movie apart, is the fact that whole mystery and intrigue. And you guys, from what you just said, doing this Sasquatch film almost along those same lines, man, I think,
you know,
I think it's great.
You know, the two Bigfoot movies that everybody kind of harkens back to, of course, is The Legend of Boggy Creek or The Creature from Black Lake. And if you watch either one of those films, that's exactly how they shot the creature. Now, Charles Pierce, when he did Legend of Boggy Creek, the reason he didn't show any close-ups or get real close to the creature or anything is because they had a really crappy suit. I mean, it was basically a rented gorilla suit, and they just sewed some old wigs to it to make it more shaggy.
I haven't seen that film. I guess I'll have to check it out somehow.
The Legend of Boggy Creek?
No, I've seen that many times. The other one that you had mentioned.
Creature from Black Lake. It was shot actually in the same area where we just filmed. It was filmed actually on the opposite side. It was in Oil City, Louisiana, where we shot Scoop'em. And on Caddo Lake, and it was in 1976. It came out, and there's a lot of great character actors in it. And the biggest of all those would be Jack Elam, who was pretty famous throughout the 50s and 60s. Did a lot of westerns and everything. And
he's a guy with weird eyes.
Doug Taylor, who's another great character actor. And the interesting thing is, I'm friends with her now, but it was her first movie. If you remember back in the 80s, the big movie star and film star, Morgan Fairchild, her younger sister, Catherine Hart, that was her first movie, was Creature from Black Lake, and she played the waitress. And Catherine is now an acting coach in Dallas. And, She's really a sweet, sweet lady, and I love her to death. And I told her one time, I said, I own one of your movies. And she goes, oh, she said, which piece of crap did you buy? and when I told her Creature from Black Lake, she just flipped out. She was like, oh my God. She goes, that was my first movie, and and was telling me all about it. But I think we're on the right path, and I think this is going to be a different kind of Bigfoot film. And the other producers and the director and everybody, when we sat down before we started filming, talked about it, the one thing that David Ford and I brought to the table was the fact that we had been with researchers. We've been in the field. He's basically a novice to the research part of it, but I had taken him out with us, and we, he's talked to a lot of researchers, and we all had the same kind of input on if you're going to make a Bigfoot movie, do it this way, and just make it, it makes it more believable that you're, you know. So we tried to incorporate everything we could within reason into the to the storyline.
And well, of course, you know, the thing is, I mean, your audio has to be superb as well, because the thing that's most scary when you're out there and you're doing excuse me, the research, is the fact that you could be walking and think, okay, there's nothing going on, then all of a sudden, wham, right next to you. And
it just gives out of you,
and you can't see it, and you're like, what the hell was that?
Oh, yeah, exactly. And we tried to do that. And the audio, you know, of course we have to do the vocalizations, and right now we're kind of trying to figure out how to do that and make it real, make it believable. And I think we've hit upon a formula I think that's going to work, and I'm actually going to be working on that this next week, doing some audio tracks and really pulling some. I mean, they kind of went to me on this and said, hey, you're the guy that's been out in the field and you've heard, you know, different things, and you know, so audio-wise, we want to make sure the screams or the calls or whatever you want to call them, the vocalizations are believable. And so I said,
well,
sure,
if you need any help there, let me know. I do great calls.
Yeah.
What I would do is, and I'm not trying to tell you what to do, but what I would do is I would get someone who could do a really good call and then intertwine a little bit of maybe a gorilla roar or another animal, interlace that with it to make it sound more deep and more guttural and more intimidating.
Right, and we're kind of going along those lines, but it's, I don't want to give too much away, you know.
I got the idea,
you know, when they did Jurassic Park, the first one.
That's right. That's exactly what I'm thinking.
The Velociraptor was basically a combination of a bull walrus call and a roar with a dolphin.
A dolphin squeal.
You know, and they combine those two things to make the Velociraptor scream.
Yeah, and it's so, it's good because it sounds, you know, it's living creatures, so naturally it's going to sound organic.
Exactly. And so we're working along those lines to bring some realism to the vocalizations and of course everybody said, you know, the creature has to look real, and I wish I could share it with everybody, but I mean, of course, we got to keep some things secret until the film comes out. But the suit, I promise you, it looks like the real thing.
You got me.
And
you got
when,
me anxious, man. You got me, Jones.
Man, I'm going to tell you. Even in a photograph. Now, we have photographs of the suit and everything. And I was looking at that, going, "Wow, that really looks awesome," you know, in that picture.
Yeah.
And then I would sit down with the producer the night after we filmed the big climactic ending to the film. We were sitting in the trailer and just going through the scenes that we had filmed of the full on, you being able to see the creature in full view. And seeing it on screen compared to a photograph,
Mm-hmm.
People are going to flip their minds when they see this. Go, wow. They're going to say that.
You got me real curious, man. I'll try not to bug you for a sneak peek. It'll be hard, but I'll try not to.
I mean, just everything about it. I will give away this, you know, it was the finite details in the costume. Something that you're not going to see in the film, probably nobody will ever know this, but except for the guy who made the suit and the people that were on set. But on one of its thumbs of the hand, it actually, he had an open wound. He created an open wound on the thumb.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
I looked at it, I said, did you rip it or something? And he went, no, I wanted it to have an open wound on his thumb.
Yeah.
And I said, why? And he said, well, you know, there's a scene in the movie where they're looking and they find hair on the barbed wire fence. And he said, I just thought in my head, if this thing crossed the barbed wire fence, it might have cut its thumb on the... I mean, just little details he was thinking of incorporating into the costume that really set it off.
Awesome.
And, I mean, even down to the feet and the toes and the toenails and the fingernails and, I mean, the whole thing just... when people see it, they're going to just go, wow, that's incredible. For somebody who doesn't do that professionally, I mean,
I've yet to see the costume that I'm going to be sporting in this Skookum sequel. Mike Woolley talked to me about it, and he said it's awesome looking. I really hope that it has a lot of those same qualities.
Oh, and this guy, he actually runs a coffee shop. I mean, that's what he does for a living. And
right.
He just does special effects makeup for fun. And when they first came to me about Travis and said, hey, this guy, I've been told by a lot of people he could do this, I had my reservations.
Right.
I was like, well, I mean, he's not a professional makeup artist, and I mean, he runs a coffee shop. How's that going to work, you know? And then when he sent me the pictures of the first, of the mold, of the head, and then he started sending me pictures of the, yeah, of his shop where he was building the suit and everything. I was like, wow. And we sat there on set, and I looked at him right face to face, and I said, dude, when people see this, they're going to be knocking down your door to build them. I mean, this guy belongs in Hollywood. He legitimately does. He's got the chops to do it.
That's kind of what, you know, I'm hoping to do as well, is bring everybody together so that everyone can benefit. I mean, like Gene, St. Gene, Jeff Byers.
Yeah.
And you with the movie, and then Johnny and them with their interview sessions. Now Debbie is interested in getting Gene and Jeff to do figures for the Skookum. Helping everybody, man. That's kind of the way I look at everything.
Oh yeah,
you know, we're all in the same boat.
Yeah, I talked to Gene, and we're going to kind of bounce some things back and forth and see how it goes. And I was on the phone today with Mark DeWorth, with the director for the Ohio Conference, and talking about, you know, screening the movie up there next spring. And, I think that that's the litmus test for, that's going to be the litmus test for me, is to have a room full of Bigfoot enthusiasts.
I'm really
Bigfoot
hoping to make it to that.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping to make it to that Ohio conference next year as well.
It looks as though we're going to be screening the film there. So, I've got my fingers crossed. Everything looks good so far. And
right.
If you are, you'll get to see it with everybody else. And you know.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, we've got another caller. We got another caller on. John, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
You guys still there? We got Donnie, actually. He's in queue. You guys know Donnie, right, from the site? He's a good guy. He's planning on coming up here pretty soon, actually. Let me get him on. Donnie, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, man, how's everything going?
I hope y'all are having better weather than I am down here.
It's been kind of raining on and off here, which kind of sucks because I was hoping to be able to go out tonight after the show. But, yeah, man,
yeah,
you're on.
We got
Michael Hall. You know, Michael, he was involved with the first Skookum movie, and he's also involved with a new upcoming movie called Something in the Woods. And then we got Johnny Holmes and the whole group is with Johnny. They're on speakerphone. They're actually out in the field right now. So
I've been listening in. I'm glad to meet y'all guys.
Nice to meet you too, man.
Yeah, let me give you a quick rundown of probably where I'm at down here. I'm pretty much just north of the lake, just north of New Orleans, and we've had activity down here. Unfortunately, not a lot of people around here are willing to go out at night with me. out on the water and out in the boats and stuff like that. I'm glad that I found these sites and found you guys to get teams going and you know, because it's out there. I'm planning on going up to see Brian later next month and be up there for about 4 or 5 days because he's had a lot of activity down there. And hopefully one day I can get y'all guys to come down here and show you around.
And that invitation, you know, all you guys that are listening, even you, Michael, that invitation extends to all you guys. You're more than welcome if you get in my area to let me know, and I'll take you out there.
Oh,
we'll
yeah.
go out there, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we're coming in September. So.
Yeah. That's great. I'm looking forward to that, too, man. You guys are going to have a blast. You know, and what's good about September is it's not quite hunting season yet, so they're not going to be run off back into deeper forest yet. So that's perfect timing, man.
Hey, Brian, I wanted to tell Johnny something. I was thinking about what they did tonight with their bait station.
Yeah.
A little trick that I found out works is the rope that you're hanging anything from a tree on to keep the raccoons out of it, if you'll take Vaseline and rub it up and down the rope from the bucket up to the limb, the raccoons won't climb down that rope.
No.
Could they use high-test monofilament and rub the Vaseline on that too?
Oh, yeah. Anything like that, if it's slick and slimy like that, raccoons, for some reason, they won't mess with it.
That's great. I didn't even know that. That's awesome, Mike.
I found that out from an old hunter told me that. He's like, oh, if you put some Vaseline on there, then raccoons will leave alone. So.
Now, Donnie.
So we've been
Donnie,
doing that.
Donnie sent that movie. He sent me the link in the chat room here to that movie, Creature from Black Lake, and I posted it on our websites so that everyone, if you're listening, you can go over there and you can actually check that out. I plan to check it out and watch it eventually.
Yeah.
You know, I've got to do the show and all that stuff. But, yeah, man,
I'd like to know if it's available on DVD or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's out there on DVD if you just go to Amazon. You can order it. It's only like $4 or $5 on Amazon or something.
Yeah, if you can't get it from Amazon, you can't get it anywhere, right?
That's
yeah,
real.
Yeah, pretty much. No,
I looked up and ran across that on YouTube probably about a month ago. I had posted it in the site, you know, and had some feedback from it and whatnot, and that's why Brian, when y'all had mentioned it, said, all right, well, let me get the link for him. And I just sent him another link yesterday for the movie that came out, Willow Creek. I got to show him how to.
We can't really talk. We can't really talk about all that on the air. Sorry, we have to keep all that private. That's questionable stuff.
I had some friends over this past weekend, and we were just playing around with the idea, and the guy actually came out and told me that 3 weeks prior, he was down in the swamp in the boat, and he actually got ran out. One of them was, you know, doing the wood knocks and threw some limbs at him and whatnot, and actually ran him out of the swamp.
That's kind of what happened. I mean, I don't feel like I was ran out. I feel like they were shadowing me until I left, you know, trying to intimidate me. I wasn't getting intimidated. I wasn't really showing any reaction at all, which I think that might throw them for a loop, you know, because I'm sure they're used to, you know, humans, and hauling ass and everything. But I don't do that, you know. I just go out there and to me, it's more of an appreciation factor. You know, I don't say thank you or anything like that. I just, and, you know, in my mind, I'm like, well, that was awesome. I'm glad they did that, you know.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. When you go out and try to make all this noise and whatnot, think of it if you're turkey hunting or deer hunting, you know. All this noise, you know, you're not going to get anything to come around. The quieter you are and the stiller you are, you got a lot more activity that's going to happen.
Well, it's like,
but that's only my,
it's
that's,
like,
that's only my opinion.
It's like John R. Tice, who is Trapper from Mountain Monsters, you know. And Trapper, if you listen, I don't mean disrespect by this, but you know, I know it's a show, I know it's for entertainment, I know it's not supposed to be factual that they're out there. You don't make that much noise when you're hunting something, you know. You don't go tramping around, you know. I mean, you guys who are hunters, and I know many of you are, you know damn well the best thing to do is just sit and wait. Yeah, it's the same. It's the same with doing this with Sasquatch. You know, I found, me personally, now this may differ for other people's, but I have found the best thing to do is just walk out there at a normal pace. Don't try to creep and all this stuff. Just walk normally, just as if you would during the day, because for the Sasquatch, it's already unusual for a human to be out there at that time of night. So that factor alone is going to make them curious. Do you guys agree? Do you understand what I'm saying? Just the fact that there's a human presence out there at night, it's going to make them like, what the hell is going on? You know, why is there a human out here? So they're going to come in, you know, and if you're quiet and you don't show any reaction, they're going to think, okay, well, maybe he's not hearing me, or maybe I'm not close enough, or maybe I'm not making a loud enough noise. So they're going to pick up their level of activity and of ways of getting your attention and trying to intimidate you out of there. So if you really want to get the really good activity, if they're around you and you know they're around you, the best thing to do is nothing at all.
Now, you know, I was going to say, one of the things that we do is a technique that it's excellent. When we go in the field, when we get to where we're going or to the spot that we want to stop, we'll sit there for 45 minutes to an hour and do nothing and just sit and listen. And if beyond that we haven't had any tree knocks or anything like that, we might do a tree knock to see if we get a response, or we might do a vocal to see if we... But we're going to wait at least 45 minutes to an hour after we get to where we're going before we do anything.
That's right.
Just for that same purpose that you're talking about. If we just sit there quietly and listen.
All right, you guys listening, we're about to go off air, but we're going to be continuing into the archive. We got another hour into the archive, and you guys can listen to that via the website tomorrow or at a future date. But while we're on the air, I want to I want to thank everyone. We're going to continue. Don't go anywhere. But I want to thank everyone while we're on the air for stopping in and for calling in. Debbie King McMartin, Michael Hall, Johnny Holmes, the whole team over there. You guys are awesome. I love all you guys. You guys are great. Donnie, appreciate you calling in as well. Stay with us, everyone on the line. We're gonna continue this conversation into the archive. That being said, let's kind of pick up what we were talking about. The lack of noise, the lack of activity. Now, see, the other night, a few weeks ago, when I had all that going on with me that I posted about and told you guys about, here's what happened. I went out there. You guys seen the video, most of you have. There's a gate in that corner where all my activity goes on. So what I did was I took some peanut butter, I placed it on the gate in various locations, and then I did like you had mentioned, Michael, I put the peanut butter jar out there, and then I left. I went down the road, and I'm on foot. I had my dog with me, which he was acting really, really weird. So I left. I went down further to the lake area, and I sat there for about an hour. Didn't hear anything. You know, usually I can hear the house from that corner. Didn't hear any of that. So I was like, all right, it's a dead night. You know, it's a dead night. You guys know what I'm talking about. You have those nights where there's just not shit going on. It's a dead night. So I start walking back towards the gate where I left the peanut butter and all that. I grabbed the jar. I noticed nothing has taken place. None of the peanut butter has been touched or anything like that. So I grabbed the jar of peanut butter, and I'm carrying it with me, which brings something else up, which I'll get to a little bit later on. So I'm carrying it with me, and I'm actually leaving the area. And I get probably about half a mile from that particular corner, and I hear the howl behind me from that corner area. And I've always heard it just outside of my recorder's ability to pick it up, you know, just at the edge of my own hearing. I've always heard it. And so I was like, you know what? The hell with this. You know, I'm tired of just barely hearing this howl, these sounds. I'm going to go back. So I turned around, and I walked back towards that corner, towards where those howls was. And Johnny, I believe you watched a little bit of that video where I went during the day. But I stood near that clear field where the moonlight was bright, because you know there was some areas that were really dark with the trees. I didn't want to push it too much, you know. So I stood there, and all of a sudden I hear, wham, like a branch, almost like a club, being slammed against the ground, and it's kind of to my rear right. Down a ravine, and then not maybe 10 seconds later, another one a little bit further up on my right, and then another one on the left-hand side of the road in the thick brush, all within a 30 to 40 second time frame. So, you know, I mean, there's people that can say, oh, well, maybe that was deer, or maybe that was this, maybe that was this. That's right. But they're not going to do it like that, one behind the other, in a semicircle around me, all at the same time. The odds of that are, I mean, you know, phenomenal, of that happening, you know, from a raccoon or deer or something like that. And the thud with which these sounds hit the ground, these branches, these clubs, logs, whatever, hit the ground, the resonating thud that accompanied that was just too big and too deep to be in any wildlife that I know of. So, still in all, I said, well, that could have been something else. You know, I wasn't going to – I don't instantly jump to conclusions that everything is Sasquatch. So, I walk a little bit further down, and I'm standing there, and I hear what to me sounds like a strong wind blowing. But I'm not feeling any wind on me. I'm not seeing any. I've got my headlamp on. I'm looking at the tops of the trees all around me. I'm not seeing any of those move. and I shine the lamp, and I see orange eye shine, and I see this about 20 foot small oak or whatever shaking, and you know, the end part of the shake, if you will, like it settling back to normal. And I'm like, holy crap. I'm like, that was a tree shake. That was something right across from me, not even 75 yards, shaking the damn tree at me. So at this point, I'm thinking, okay, you know, I'm kind of putting everything back together. The howl, the slams around me, and then that tree shake. And I'm like, okay, maybe I need to start heading out of this area. And my dog is acting real weird. I mean, literally just shoving its nose into the ground, into the dirt for no reason. I don't know. So I start walking back towards the house, and I get about, I'd say about 100, maybe 200 yards from where the tree shake was. And that's when I do the yawn, which I recorded and you guys heard. I do the yawn really loud, and I hear, walk! And it, in my ears and on the recording, it's definite tree knock. I mean, you guys know the sound of something wooden hitting a big-ass tree. So I was like, and you guys heard the audio. I was like, holy crap, that's a tree knock. So I take my time. I kind of wait a little while to see if there's anything else. But I'm steady moving forward, you know, foot by foot every once in a while. And I do this a lot. I stop and just turn. I have my headlamp on. I just stop just out of nowhere and turn real quick, because you never know if something's going to be behind you. For one, most predators will come from behind. And two, these things aren't going to be expecting it. So you might just catch a good glimpse and some good eye shine. So I do, it's kind of like, it's kind of like in that movie, The Hunt for Red October, where they do that, where the submarines do that turnaround real quick, the unexpected. So I do that with my headlamp. And I'm doing that the whole way, and I get about another 100 or so yards, and that's when those two howls were picked up on my recorder. That was exactly 7 minutes. I edited it all down and cropped it down so you guys could hear it, but that was exactly 7 minutes between the tree knock and those two howls. And at that point, I left the area completely. But, you know, I really... Huh?
I was going to say, it sounds... Now, we've tried to figure out why they do certain things, and I can say we've had the tree knocks. We've actually had tree knocks in the middle of the day, and heard them. I mean, probably 50 yards away. And
right.
It seems like there is a. And we've had this when we've gone into areas and just simply drove into a spot, got out, dropped a recorder off, and then drove away. And it's like, on the beginning of it, okay, on the recorder, after we drop it off and drive away, you'll hear, we'll get a tree knock.
Hold on a second. Somebody, I'm getting feedback. I don't know if you're listening to the program at the same time you're on the phone, but that's kind of giving us a little feedback.
But we had like when we dropped off the recorder, and then drive away, we would have a tree knock. And then shortly before we would come back to pick it up the next morning, as we're coming up, you'll hear another tree knock. It's almost like it's a warning to any of the others in the area, saying, hey, they're back.
That's right.
Or,
and that's the impression,
or, you know,
that's the impression I got as well when I did that yawn.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys heard it. There was no cropping of that from the time I did the yawn. That was, 5 seconds from the time I did the yawn to the time of the knock. It was almost like them saying, hey, the human's still around. You know?
Right.
And then the howls came.
I
felt like the howls always come after they think I am out of the area and too far away to hear or notice it. And that's why, you know,
right.
These, you and I have talked, these guys that go out there Finding Bigfoot or whatever, they do all this shit. They don't know what they're telling these Sasquatch, you know?
No, you know. And that's what I was going to say was we've kind of figured out that the tree knocking can serve, I think it's it can serve a dual purpose too. I mean, for them,
that's right.
It's a warning system to other ones in the area, saying, "Hey, we've got visitors."
Yep.
And then also, it's we've had an incident where we were sitting around a campfire and had one knock. About 100 yards to the south of our camp, and before we could respond, another one knocked, you know, about the same or equal distance to the north of our camp.
To give away their location.
Like, hey, one of them is saying to the other one, "Hey, I'm over here."
Okay,
oh,
I'm
okay,
in position
I'm over here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to watch or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a correlation with the number of knocks.
I think they may also use that during their hunting techniques as a distraction. For example, I believe, from my experience, I believe that they set up in different locations along these fields or along these right-of-ways or along these old roads because deer, you know, most animals will use the path of least resistance. So I believe they set up there in different areas and different groups. And either a couple of them run the animal in a direction of the waiting ones, or they will use the wood knock to distract the deer or the animal to look in that direction while the other one comes from the other side and grabs it.
Right. I'll give you a prime example of what I was talking about. If you've looked on our website and seen the pictures of the tracks that we found in the mud along the Neches River. While we were casting those tracks directly across the river from us, no less than maybe 30 yards in some really thick undergrowth, while we were sitting there getting ready to pour the hydrocal into the cast, to the print, Bruce Dinsford and I were the only two people there, and you hear it was just a whack, whack, whack. I mean, it was three really quick in succession tree knocks, and we froze in our tracks and looked in that direction. Now, this was on the opposite side of the river from where the tracks were.
Right.
So I don't know if that one was distracting us so that the one that left the tracks could get away or get out of the area because they were that fresh,
I believe that too, and I'll tell you why in a sec. First, let me say that. I got to go back. I'm sorry. Remember when I said in my story that I picked up the peanut butter jar and was carrying it with me? Well, I'm kind of wondering if that might have had something to do with it, or if they smelled the dog, or I've been going over all that in my mind. You know, well, maybe it was just me that drew them in. But I believe also that the number of knocks that they do has a significance as well, because in my area, all I ever hear is one knock. You know, and I've heard reports and people say that they hear two and three.
Right. Now, I can say that was the only time I've ever heard a quick succession of three knocks.
Mm-hmm.
All the other times I've heard single knock.
But as far as the distraction,
as
far as the distraction,
I think that's
factor,
what he was doing.
You know, I've said that their eyes shine orange. It's kind of like an orangish red, like a rusty type color, like a lava type color, if you will. But one day, me and my kids were out walking during the day, and we heard we had branches. Or acorns, or we don't have rocks, so I can't say it was a rock throw, but we had something thrown in our area. So we kind of didn't really pay attention. We kept walking. This is the same area where all this activity takes place. We kept walking, and shortly later, we hear it again. Something else gets thrown, and instantly, we kind of turned towards that area, but I turned. I didn't really look towards that area. I looked away from it, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw this, and the color that I would describe it was the color of dead pine needles. I saw that son of a bitch run across the road, hit that road with one foot in the middle, and that was it. It was gone just that fast. So, I've talked about this before on the show. I've talked to a couple of you guys about this too. I believe that they throw these rocks and they throw these sticks and shit as a distraction. So you look that way while they go the other way.
Oh yeah, I was going to ask Johnny if he'd ever had the knocks that, I mean, like multiple knocks or
yes.
Has he only experienced a single knocks?
Yeah, we've heard kind of like what you said earlier about hearing one to your south and one to your north. Hear that here also.
Right.
We'll hear one on one side of us, and then not too long after that, it'll be on the other side of us. And we've heard vocalizations like that also.
Yeah.
There's been times, too, when I've only heard one knock.
But I mean, like, and multiple knocks.
The one knock is confusing to me because I don't, you know, if they knock, like you said earlier, if one knocks to tell one where he is and the other one answers him, and then we knock, what do you think they think of that?
You know, I think that like when we first go out into the field at night, and if there's no activity, and we do a tree knock, we're hoping that we entice them to knock back.
Well, here's my theory. They're knocking because they know we're there. So obviously they can see
right.
us. So what's the point of us knocking? They're going to know it's us, you know?
Well, that's true. Maybe it's just an enticement. Maybe out of curiosity, they'll knock back to see if we do it again or, you know.
I mean, there could always be the case, you know, the mistaken case where they actually believe it's another Sasquatch. But I think, I really believe that most of the time they're knocking because they know we're in the area. They've seen us. They've heard us. You know, it's really
right.
hard for humans to be stealthily quiet out in the forest.
Right.
That they watch and they know and they hear when we're out there.
Oh yeah, and I agree with that completely. If it's a distant knock, you know what I'm saying? I think it's if they reply and it's from a distance,
right?
Where we know that they're not watching us, they're not close enough to see us yet.
Yeah,
that
could also be their way of asking others, hey, is that you that I hear? Is that you,
right.
you know?
Yeah, and if we knock in response to them, then maybe we can entice them to come in closer and then see if anything happens. I think everything that we're doing
right.
is all speculative in theory anyway. But
That's right. I was just about to say that the best thing, I mean, you just got to go with what you feel when you're out there in that moment.
Yeah, yeah. And Johnny, you're using Sweet Feed tonight. I was going to throw another one at you. I used and this was an incident that I had happen on the Trinity River. I wanted to bait a camera, and I went and I got a burlap bag. And I went to a local butcher, and I got him to give me a whole cow liver, beef liver. And that thing is massive.
Oh,
and I stuck it in the – and I stuck the whole thing in a burlap bag. And I I use a rope, and I grease that rope with Vaseline, and I threw the thing up into a tree, and I pulled up into a tree about 12 foot up and tied it off, and I put a camera on the tree trunk. And I waited. I left the area, and I went back a week later. I waited a whole week, and I went back, and I got the camera. The bag was still there. The beef was still there. And I was sorely disappointed because the area we were in had a lot of sightings, and I pulled the SD card, and I had a laptop, and I started looking through, and I noticed that I had about 60 pictures on there, and about halfway through, I had one picture that was just completely white. It was just completely whited out. And I found out, in talking to a lot of photographers, and I was a photographer myself in the Navy, but if something is really, really close to the camera and the flash goes off.
Yeah, it's going to white it out. It's the same.
It's just going to white it out.
It's the same with the night vision scope I got.
Right. And so I started looking around the area. I just started looking around, and in every direction around that tree, about 30 yards out, I found trees that were broken over and pulled across the trails in every direction. So it was almost as if they were saying or telling each other, don't go over there. It's a trap, it's a trick, whatever. But every direction, all the way around it, into 360 degrees, every trail and everything I found broken trees and branches and stuff, and they were stacked up, not just pulled over, but stacked up across the trails, leading to that tree. And
well, I think,
to me, that was a clear sign of an intelligent being that was saying, there's something not right. Don't go over there.
That's right.
Leave it. You know, you might want to go over there and get that liver, but leave it alone. And
yeah.
They did.
Yeah,
they left it alone.
Danger.
So.
Well, I think we also need to stress to the listeners that might tomorrow or whatever listen to the archive, I think we also need to stress the inherent dangers of walking through the woods with, you know, raw meat or you
oh,
know,
yeah.
Because, you know, it may attract a Sasquatch, but then again, it may attract something a little bit more volatile and dangerous, like a mountain lion or bear or something along those nations. So you really got to be careful.
Oh, yeah.
What
yeah,
do
don't forget the wild hogs.
Yeah, wild hogs.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, even sweet feed will attract the hogs and, you know, and the bear.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, mountain lions, you know, we know those are meat eaters, and we know that they won't hesitate.
Right. And as far as baiting techniques or any kind of technique we've tried to use, I've even gone to the dollar store and bought, there was a little toy that it was looked like a giant lollipop, but inside of it was an LED thing, a ring, and it would spin when you push the button and make all these colors. And I took that up into the Kiamichi Mountains in Oklahoma, and I pushed the button on it, put new batteries in it, pushed the button on it, and taped the button down, so, and then took fishing line and put that thing way up in the top of a tree. And we ring the whole area with cameras and hope that maybe something would see that from far away and come over to check it out.
Now, you put your cameras from an elevated position, pointed down, or are you just putting them horizontal? Because we talked about that before.
I've actually got Bruce Denford's come up with an idea, and he said instead of strapping them to trees, he actually went and got, you know, those what do they call those things that you put on a bookshelf that hold the books in place?
Yeah, the L frame.
Yeah, the little metal thing that you put on a bookshelf to keep your books
the L bracket
standing up straight. Yeah, He took one of those and he bent it at a 45-degree angle and put his camera on that and then would stick it, like, next to a log on the ground, pointing up towards the bay. We put them up in the trees, pointing down. We've put them on
that,
the tree trunks,
that would be,
pointing directly.
To me, that would be the ideal, because we know, I mean, even humans, you know, they scan horizontally across their environment before actually, you know, I mean, that's why deer hunters are elevated as well. Not too many animals. Now, Sasquatch is not an animal, and we know that. But not even people, not too many people actually look up.
Right.
Hey, I got a question for Michael.
I'm sorry?
I got a question for Michael.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
You remember that place you told me about in Corsicana? Or
yeah.
Just outside of Corsicana? Well, I went there to find out about that the next week, and I told Brian about this. I want to see what your opinion is. I went there, and I turned on the wrong road. I passed the road that you told me to turn on accidentally, and I turned on the next one. And so I was driving down through there, and there was no places to camp or nothing. And, you know, after a little while, I got thinking, maybe I turned on the wrong road. And then I seen a turn off to the left. And so I turned down there, and I came out. I just went through a little bit of woods, and then I came out into this big open area. It had a little pond there, but it was a big paved area. It looked like a boat ramp parking lot is what it looked like. But there was no, like, painted stalls to park in, anything like that. It was just a big old paved area. So I went down to the other end of it. That's where the pond was. And I started to come back, and I saw something on the ground, so I stopped and looked at it, and it was like a backbone of a deer or something. So I got out and I got to looking around, and there's just like pieces, body parts of deer all over that place. Legs, from down. But
what you did was you actually passed the campground and you pulled into the WMA itself. And if you go all the way down, it's like 3 miles from the main road. And it opens up into this big, what looks like a parking lot in the middle of the woods. And it's a paved road all the way there. And there was another area there, and they call that the boneyard. And deer hunters and hog hunters who field dress their deer can leave leave scraps and things. I mean, like, the legs and there's stuff all over that place, man. And
he sent me pictures.
Yeah,
we were trying to figure out what
it
was.
It's but that area, that whole area. There's some recordings of screams that I've got that are on the website that I've recorded at that very spot.
Well, that's kind of what I was leaning towards too. Even though those bones were the result of men, of humans, that's not to say that's not a great area, man, because, you know, if they know they can get a free meal every once in a while, they're going to hang around there.
Well, that whole south unit is about, what, I think it's 14,000 acres of protected forest.
Well, it was really creepy, and I got to looking around, and I saw something that was almost, I'd say maybe 75% decomposed, and I couldn't tell what it was when I first looked at it, and then I saw its arm, and it was a gator. It looked like about maybe 14, a gator. And I don't know if somebody killed it or, well, it was maybe eating some of that other stuff or what, I don't know, but it was really creepy out there.
And see, we have an area.
Watch, you know.
We have an area like that here. We have an area like that here, too.
Do you have a like wildlife management area like that, or?
Yeah. In fact, from my house, there's a wildlife refuge. If you go a little bit further, it's a wildlife management area. And if I continue on that same path from my house, I will eventually get to the hunt camp that where I go hunting. It's about 20 miles down there through the woods. But there's an area around near that hunt camp where everyone goes and they dump their, you know, their scraps and whatnot.
Right.
Yeah, I can get to there.
Great area.
I haven't thought about going out there, you know, but it wouldn't be no problem for, you know, when you guys come down, Johnny, even you, Donnie, when you come up, it wouldn't be a problem to get over there.
I was going to tell Johnny, if you went all the way to the end of that road to the big parking lot area, all the way at the dead end, if you look on Google Earth and measure it, it's only about 75 to 100 yards through the trees to the Trinity River.
Oh, yeah. I didn't go all the way to the end. I didn't know where it went, so I just found a spot and turned around. But the big parking lot area turned off of that.
Yeah, if you keep going past where you found all the bones, it goes 3 miles. It goes exactly 3 miles back to another big parking lot area. And I've sat there and we've had tree knocks and recordings and recorded vocalizations and everything in that area from that one spot. And if you cross the bridge on 287, which is just about a quarter of a mile to the north, is where I had my sighting in 2010. It crossed 287, going from the south unit to the north unit. So that was, I mean, there's been sightings there, and we found tracks there. So
after I turned around and came back out of there, I turned and I went into the road that I passed, and that was
that's
the campground. I mean, it was a campground. It had like big long areas that were paved to like put a trailer or something. But other than that, there was no restrooms or none of that kind of stuff there.
It's primitive camping. It's a primitive campsite, and.
Yeah.
We've camped there. I've camped there for I don't know how many years, and I've never seen any other campers in that site. I've never had other campers in there while we were there, ever.
That area is a lot like my area over here because, I mean, there's a same – you're describing the same exact layout pretty much.
There was nobody there
when we went.
If you ever come over, Brian, I'll take you. I'll take all of you guys, and we'll go down there. In fact, Bruce Dinsford and his brother, Bob, went there this past weekend and left out recorders overnight. And their mom doesn't live too far from there, so they just went back to their mom's house and stayed the night and then went back the next morning and got the recorders. And I'm waiting to hear back if they got anything. But that's a great area. And the campground, I mean, it's primitive camping, but it is it's very secluded. Very few people go there. I don't know why. It's a great place.
There was nobody there when we went either.
Well,
it is some of those paved areas go right up to the tree line almost. So it's a good area.
Yeah.
Just like a good area to set up.
We've had. Up and down that main road that you went down or that you were on, that we've had, we've stopped and dropped off recorders all up and down that road and left them overnight. And, I mean, you pick up, some really crazy, crazy stuff and we put out cameras. And one of the incidences I was talking about the camera thing was that Bruce, those little Smokies? The little sausages. Okay,
yeah.
he took like a miniature rake, and he took the little Smokies, and he just put one, he poked them onto the end of a rake, and he stuck that into the ground next to a tree, and put the camera on the tree, and the camera worked great. And he went back, all the little Smokies were gone, but the camera didn't catch what took them.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's weird.
I mean, it just, It's like in one frame, all of the sausages are still on the rake, and the next frame, they're all gone.
That's interesting. And that's got to be frustrating as hell when that happens.
We've got two cameras on the suite.
But, you know, when you guys come this way, when you guys come this way, what we're going to do is I'm going to take you we're going to drive the area during the daytime and show you guys. I'm going to show you guys what's going on and, you know, where everything's located. That way you have a better idea at night.
Yeah, another thing is somebody suggested this, too, about the cameras. It's actually, if you can find two trees that were close together and put a camera on one side and a mirror on the other tree, then you might be able to catch whatever comes behind the camera.
That's right. That's a good idea.
I don't know if that worked. I haven't tried it myself, but it makes a lot of sense. If you put a mirror on one tree and then put the camera on another tree close to it, pointing at the mirror, if anything is coming up behind the camera and setting it off.
Yeah, just outside.
Yeah, you might catch what is setting the camera off if it's coming up from behind it. And I said, well, I'll have to try that. Somebody just told me that the other day. I thought that's a great idea.
Yeah, interesting.
My girlfriend has kind of gotten into it a little bit, and yeah, you know, she's dead set on getting a game cam. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to argue. I'm like, go ahead. Yeah, hell yeah. That's what you want to do.
There's a guy that I met a couple of years ago in Falk that was on an expedition. We were all up there, and he had a great idea, and he took a log, and he bore the center of the log out.
Mm-hmm.
And then he cut a top and cut the square part out of the center of the log, and he had a little DVR camera that runs for like 5 hours or 6 hours or whatever, and he just put the top back into it, and it just looks like a log,
right?
A piece of wood, and his camera is pointing out the hollowed out end, and as he goes walking along, he'll just, you know, place it on the trail and leave it. And then he'll go back 5 or 6 hours later and he'll get it and he'll download it to see if anything came along or, you know, it's the camera. And I've had people, Scott Kessler in Louisiana, he took tree bark literally and hot glued it to the outside of the casing of all of his cameras.
Yeah,
to make
that
it
makes
blend
sense.
In with the tree. So,
any
ideas I can give?
Yeah, man, much appreciated. Yeah, but you also have to be careful how much pre-setup you do when you're out there, how much noise you make, prior when you're setting up your cameras and stuff like that. Because, like I said, man, I have no doubts that they watch, and if you make a lot of noise And you know, it's like that Finding Bigfoot episode where they're out there trying to use the pigs and they're out there that whole day banging on a wooden to make a wooden pig pen. It's like you gave yourself away. You know? Naturally they know you're there, they're not gonna come around now, you know?
Right.
So
well,
yeah.
You know, I think that some of the things they're doing are working on the pretext that these things are so curious. That
yeah.
they'll, when they get away, that they'll come in and try to figure out what they were doing.
No, I don't.
And I don't buy into it.
I think more than anything that if they're out there making all that noise during the day, that those things creep up during the day and watch from a distance, and that satisfies their curiosity enough to say there's humans out here. They're building something or you know. And you got to remember with like the Finding Bigfoot crew, there's so many people out there. You've got the cameraman, you've got the boom guy, you got the audio.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like.
Oh yeah.
You know, You don't go when you're hunting, even hunting deer, you don't go and tell the deer, hey, I'm going to come out here later and shoot you. You know?
Exactly. Hey, before I forget, I did want to pass something on that did happen while we were filming the movie.
Okay.
That was pretty cool. We were filming at night, overnight. This is probably about 3 o'clock in the morning. And we were at this farmhouse that is really remote. It's only a couple of miles, actually, across the woods to the Chicago Lake and to the river. And so we're all standing around between shots. And I was just, you know, goofing around, and I did a vocalization. I did a yell. And we're all kind of standing around and laughing. And then in the distance, we had a return call. And then from like the east of where we were at. And it was pretty distant, but it was a very long, drawn out, single tone call.
And there was no chance
there's
no chance that anyone knew you guys were out there and
no, nobody knew we were there. I mean, we kept our shooting location secret. We didn't want a bunch of people coming out.
A human calling back just to mess with you.
No. There was nothing between the house and the lake from that location, except forest. There's no other houses or anything else around. And but when it did it, to the west of just west, maybe 75 yards away, 100 yards away, a pack of coyotes went off. And, of course, at that point, all the women that were on locations on the set were, oh, my God, it's wolves. And I was like, no, those are coyotes. They're far enough. They're not going to come over here. But we did get a single tone response.
Well, I mean, we doing what we do, we know that there's a correlation between the coyotes and the Sasquatch. I mean, how many times have you heard both, you know, going off at the same time or close to each other?
Well, I was going to say the coyotes. We hadn't heard them at all night long, and it wasn't. They didn't do it when I did my vocalization. But when this return call happened, the coyotes went off.
That's interesting you say that, because there was one time in particular I was out there with my son, and I did a howl, and just instantly all these coyotes start going off around us, and enough to make me say, okay, let's leave, you know, because they were real close. But what interests me more than anything is that these coyotes seem to recognize that call.
Yeah. And like I said, they didn't do it when I made my vocalization. But they damn sure did it after I got the return call back.
Yeah.
You know, they did it then.
There's some correlation. Whether they follow the Sasquatch to pick up scraps, or the Sasquatch follow them, or the Sasquatch use them.
I've always been told that coyotes were basically four-legged vultures, and they're scavengers. So I tend to believe that they're following the Sasquatch around, and whatever scraps he leaves behind, they get. Because for them, it's easy food.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if
you're a Sasquatch and you have a pack of coyotes to take down a deer, chances are there's going to be something left over. All you got to go do is go up in there and strong arm your way in, and you've got the food, you know.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of vocalizations, I was going to ask Donnie, if he's still online or on the air or on the phone with us.
Donnie had to step away a minute, but Greg's here.
No, Donnie?
Donnie.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Donnie,
You're in South Louisiana.
Yeah, I'm here in South Louisiana.
I was going to say, now, have you ever been over to Sherburne?
No, I'm not sure how familiar you are with the area. I haven't made it over to the other side of Baton Rouge towards the lakes over there. I'm right over here by Lake Pontchartrain and Lake Maurepas.
Yes,
mainly my area that I'm in.
Right.
Yeah, I know.
I'll tell you guys another good area is down towards Cameron.
Not bad.
If you've ever
down
been
on Cameron?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, I used to. I'm from Morgan City. I used to drive carry-all for offshore company back and forth all over down there. And that's an interesting area down there towards Cameron.
Well, I was just going to tell Donnie that in the Sherburne area, just west of Baton Rouge, we've had a ton of activity over there as well. And since he's a little bit closer than I am, it might be an area he wants to check out. And if he gets a chance to, we've had one of the vocalizations on the website that we actually used, we captured those recordings there, and they're so clear. So we actually call blast those out sometimes.
That's interesting to know. Yeah, I do need to try to make a trip over there. I'd like to get some more people that are around in this area, as a small group, because, like Brian, I hate going out in the woods by myself. It's not only dangerous a lot of times to do that, especially going alone.
And it's not the danger of the Sasquatch that worries me. It's the other wildlife.
Correct.
And the deliverance pathway.
Yeah. Wow. I actually live in the area like that.
Looking like a pig or nothing, you know.
Yeah, I actually live in the area that's really kind of, yeah. It's the people here are kind of sketchy.
But, down in Sherburne, just so Donnie knows, you can go way, way down into the bayou there, and it's all on the levee system. And there's a couple of really good camp spots that we've camped at, and we've had activity right there. Next to the camp, we haven't had to leave camp hardly to get vocalizations or tree knocks or anything. And it's so far removed from everything else that it's like you're in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you're literally in the middle of nowhere. And it's a great place. So if you get over in that area, go check it out.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I had told Brian here a while back that it's been several years now, but I was close enough to one at night where I could actually hear it breathing. It made the hair on the back of my neck stand up.
Wow.
You know, here's what I picked up. I picked up something on last night's recording. It's funny, it sounds similar to breathing, but here was what was weird that I picked up. Almost a very low bass sound. Like, you understand what I'm saying? Not the sound, but just you could feel
right.
The pressure. When I was listening to it with my earbuds in, I could feel the pressure in my ears of it. And I found that really interesting. It probably won't come out if I, if I post it or record or, edit or whatever. But I was like, what the hell is that from? It was a very low. I can't even describe it, man. You know how when you listen to something with a lot of bass, you get that.
Oh yeah.
Not the boom sound, but the resonation in your ears, the pressure from it.
Yeah.
That's what it was like on my recorder, and then shortly thereafter, I could hear what sounded like breathing. But I can't. I can't go and post that, and I won't. I can't go and post that and say this is a Sasquatch because I don't know. You know, I mean, it's just
right.
noise. Yeah, and that's the main thing with me and with Johnny and the guys over there. We've kind of all agreed that, you know, if you can't look at an image or hear a sound and rule out everything else and say, yeah, I think that might be a Sasquatch, then, you know, we're not
right.
going to post it. You know, we're not going to post these pictures of the woods with 50 million shadows and red circles and, you know, that's
right.
Yeah, that's stupid.
Well, what you're describing to me kind of sounds like infrasound.
You know, that's exactly what I was thinking when I listened to it. There wasn't so much of a noise as it was the pressure level changing.
Right. Well, that and infrasound is ultra low frequency sounds, and that's part of what you're describing is that pressure. I read a paper that the Department of Defense did on. They were doing studies on infrasound as a type of weapon, and all the things that infrasound can cause a person. I mean, you're going to find this is interesting because it said infrasound can cause people to suddenly for no reason be fearful for their lives.
That's right.
A sense of dread, a sense it can cause nausea, it can cause headaches, it can cause all these things that people have described. People have experienced a sighting or been in an area where they think they were close to a Sasquatch, and then all of a sudden they have this sudden sense of dread or sudden sense of complete fear or whatever, and people have talked about that being an infrasound thing, and that's, you know, elephants use infrasound, so
well,
we know that it exists in the animal world.
Another way that I can describe it is when you put your head how the sound level changes. That's what it was like, and it happened a couple of times in succession. For about a 20-second span, kind of one behind the other, it happened, and I was like, what is that? But I mean, I could send it to you and let you check it out too.
Yeah, I'd like to. But I'm just throwing that out there again. It's all speculation. So.
Yeah, there are no experts. I mean, we're just going by what we feel and what we think, and you know, it's all using our own relativity with other known creatures and animals and even humans and how humans act. You know, one thing that I use as a basis with these things is a dog. You know, that curiosity level of a dog, but at the same time that the way a dog doesn't know you will keep back at a distance
right.
from you. But man,
I said I agree with that. I think they have a sense like a dog to know if you're basically a good person or a bad person, or if you're there to try to hurt them or curious or whatever. I think they have that sense to know that, you know. But that's my opinion too. I'm not an expert.
Well, like Brian said about his area, I'll invite everybody, if you get over here and want to go down to the WMA and down the Trinity River bottoms and feel free to come over. I'll take everybody down there.
Right.
I know there's been a lot of activity in that area over the years, and I think even the BFRO has a report on their website that happened right over there by that WMA, John.
Well, see, that's what we have here. We have the WMA land, and we have the refuge, what I call it. I mean, it's all
the same part of the same thing.
Right.
Only difference is the refuge area, there's no hunting allowed at all. Excuse me.
Right.
But it's a huge expanse. And you, you could literally get lost back there in a vehicle.
Well, this area, I think it's a, it's only like 20,000 acres in, as a whole. But the eastern border of the whole place is the Trinity River.
Right.
And there's tons and tons and tons of activity up and down the Trinity River. And just about 20 miles south downriver is another area we call the Buzzard Head that has had a ton of activity. And we've all up and down that area, we get reports, you know, from people, you know, sighting reports, or they hear vocalizations and, you know, various things. So I think that's a good spot to go. You can camp there. It doesn't cost you anything.
See, you know, people are, like, well, why don't you see them when you're driving down through there in your car? And guys, we got we got probably about 5 minutes left. But, you know, the thing is, it's so easy for them to hear a car coming back on those roads. You know, there are some paved roads, but most of them are gravel. So, I mean, they have, trust me, I've been back there and I've heard cars coming from at least 2 miles away. Enough time for me to actually go and hide and not be seen. So, yeah, I mean, believe me, if you're out, even as a person, if you're out there in the woods and you are listening and know what to listen for, you can tell when someone else is approaching, you know. Because, I mean, you're out there by yourself. Me, for example, I'm out there by myself. I don't want some dumbass redneck stopping on the side of the road screwing with me or, hey, man, you need some help. You know, just keep driving, dude. Just go. You know, I'm out here. I've got a headlamp on. You see the hunting knife and the machete hanging from my side. Does it look like I need help? You know, so nine times out of ten, to avoid that, I'll just hide. And it's so easy, man. It's so easy to hide from vehicles. I've proved that. It was four of us out there, and there was nothing but a little sign. A car was coming. We went on the side of the sign. The car, we could tell the car was turning in there. So we just, as the car was turning, we traced around to the other side of the sign. You know what I'm saying? Parallel in that car. That son of a bitch never even knew we were there.
Yeah.
It's so easy.
We've done the same thing. We've had to do the same thing to avoid people doing the same thing. You know, stopping. Are you okay? Everything all right? Yeah.
And see, that one experience told me that a Sasquatch could do the same thing, and they could be right next to you, and you wouldn't even freaking know it.
Exactly. Well, I tell you what, Brian, I had a great time.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you guys calling in. I got to think of what I'm going to do for next week's show. Maybe Doyle will be feeling better than I can. Maybe Doyle will be feeling better and I can get him on.
Yeah, that'd be
cool. Yeah. I'll think of something. I mean, hey, if you know anybody, too, you know, with any good experience, put them in touch with me, and I'd love to get some people on the show and, you know.
Absolutely.
Johnny. We ain't got time tonight. I completely forgot about it. But we're going to be talking soon about your paranormal experience, your that you had there.
Okay.
Yeah, we need to kind of change it up a little bit and get more ghosts and other stuff into the show.
Well, yeah, I'm a cryptid guy, but that kind of is a little weird. But I don't know much into that field, but just what I saw.
We don't have time really tonight to go into it, but hopefully next week we'll be able to talk about that.
Well, next week it's working, but it'll be 2 weeks.
I'm sorry, what?
I said next week I got to work, but maybe 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, man. I can talk to Mary and see if she wants to come back on, too.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
And see what she gives.
But anyway, guys, thanks. I appreciate it. Johnny, tell all the team there, man. I'm glad to know them, and you know, I think of them all as family, and I'm glad to be, you know, to have them and be a part of it all. Donnie, I appreciate you calling in. Michael, man, awesome as always. Very, very informative.
No problem.
And keep us informed on the movie, Michael, as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And we'll have you guys. We'll have you back on as well. All right, guys. Well, I gotta end it so it doesn't end itself. And you guys have a good night, Johnny. You and the team. Be safe out there, man. For real.
We will, man. Appreciate it.
All right, y'all take care.
Everybody have a great night, man.
Thanks.
I'm on the air, huh?